Today, on Shipment from Shiloh, Andrew joins me to revisit a recent store championship. We predict the meta before recapping how we performed. Finally, we make changes to our decks based on our tournament experience. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. Winter's Tidings, Runner. Welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm your host, Graham, and today I'm joined by 2018 store champion and friend from the north, Andrew. Andrew, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on, brother?
Thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. I ran into you at the Milwaukee store champs this year, which was a super fun day. And I wanted to have you on the show because we had some great games. It was a really good tournament. And, you know, I thought you had some cool decks, some cool insight, you know. But before we get into the tournament, I want to get to know you just a little bit more, as does our audience. And so we're going to do that in our first segment called Searchlight. Cool. So, Andrew, what is your gaming background, and then how did you even get into Netrunner in the first place?
Yeah, I've been playing tabletop games for a long time, probably since, like, elementary, middle school. A buddy of mine got me into Magic the Gathering, as everyone does. Played that for a long time until the money ran out, and then I took a long hiatus while I was in, like, college or so. I got back into it after I moved back to Madison, like, actually during college, and a buddy of mine was into a game called HeroClix. Which it's a collectible miniatures game, primarily Marvel DC based. And I played that for most of college once I moved back to Madison. And I really enjoyed it, but some questionable design decisions happened. It got really expensive, and I stopped playing that. But the same guy who was into HeroClix was like, hey, I bought this new game called Netrunner at Gen Con this year, which would have been, I think, 2012 or so.
That sounds right.
And I'm like, oh, okay, this is cool. We'll see what this is. And so I'm like, hey, can you teach me Netrunner? And he's like, yes, I would love to teach you Netrunner. So we played two games at his house. I'll date myself here. This would have been 2014. So we played Andromeda versus NBN Making News.
Yep.
And I think the other side was Wizard versus Building a Better World, Core Wayland. And within two games, I'm like, this is the best game I've ever played in my entire life.
Absolutely.
So I literally left his house and went on eBay and bought a full collection for like $250 that night.
Oh my gosh.
And the rest is history. I didn't think I'd be playing it like quote unquote seriously, like at a competitive level. I kind of figured it'd just be a lark, but like I was just playing the game like every waking moment of my life for a little while was Netrunner. I'd be playing every week. I played on Octagon when that was a thing. Octagon to JNet, and here I am still playing in 2018.
Wow, that's pretty sweet, man. So you got into it at this like kind of middle early stage, but you dove right in. It sounds like like were you going to meetups and tournaments pretty much as soon as you got that collection?
Yeah, before I got the collection, and I was borrowing a couple of decks of his just so I could go play at our local league night here in Madison. I'm like, if I'm gonna jump in the pool, let's touch the bottom, right?
That's right. That's right. We're gonna jump in the deep end. No, that's really sweet. It took me like pretty much a year and a half to like get up the courage to actually go and play with strangers in person.
Okay.
Right. So I'm always just, I'm a little bit envious actually, because if I knew how much fun I would be having if I just got out the door and like played with people, then I would have done it like as soon as I bought the game. Right.
It's tough to move from like a kitchen table environment to like I've never met this person and now I'm playing a card game against them. I've played in tournaments all over the place and here and for HeroClix and whatnot. So I was pretty comfortable in that environment already.
Yeah.
I just never took that game seriously. Like I just like, it's a comic book game. So I just wanted to play like comic accurate teams.
Right.
Cause I'm a nerd and I'm like, how well can I do with this team from issue number 300 of Legion of Superheroes?
Sure.
But in Netrunner, it's weird because it's the complete opposite. Like, when I sit down to play Netrunner, like, I want to win. Like, that is my goal, is to win every single time I sit down and play the game. Like, of course, I want to have fun, and I want my opponent to have fun as well, but I also want to win at the same time.
Yeah. And I mean, you were like a playtester for like a hot minute there too. So
for a second, yeah.
For 35 seconds, I was a playtester.
Yeah, they realized how bad of an idea it was, and they were like, "Yeah, we can't have him do this anymore."
This Andrew guy, he's too much. We gotta cut him off. But yeah, like it sounds like you really got into it. You had a ton of fun. So like, what are your favorite decks and strategies that you like to play, and why?
Like of all time. My favorite deck?
Sure.
My favorite runner deck ever is Noize, and this is the part where if you hate Noize, you can just click the little X in the corner of your browser to stop listening. Right. Everyone else
actually, you can just fast forward though, because
like... yeah, or you can just fast forward and listen to us talk about anything else. But yeah, Noize is my favorite Netrunner deck ever.
Why?
Noize was like the complaint that Noize got was that he just bumbled into victory by you just installing cards. And while there is a certain amount of truth to that, playing Noize was, I think, the closest Netrunner gets to playing like a puzzle. You're basically the goal with Noize, or at least my favorite era of Noize, which was like right after Mumbad Cycle started, but before like IG got really good. Mm-hmm. You're basically just trying to figure out which of the servers, the corp servers, you can pressure the most, and how much pressure you can apply. You pressure R&D through installing viruses, milling cards, and through Medium. HQ, you apply pressure with like Imps and Lampreys. Archives, you pressure through ID ability, and then you have Faust to apply pressure to the remote, and you can imp the remote as well. Mm-hmm. So you're basically just trying to sit there and figure out, okay, how much can I, like, which servers can I ruin, and how much can I ruin them by?
Sure, sure. So, I mean, he was the master of disruption, right? Which is a really cool technique.
I loved that. Loved that. And I understand that he needed to go, because in a post-Jackson Howard world, Noize is just not healthy for the game.
Yeah, the counterplay to that has to be a recursion mechanic, which is inherently bad.
And not only a recursion mechanic, an instant speed recursion mechanic, because if there's no instant speed recursion, then Noize could, in theory, just go install three viruses, run archives as much as possible, and the corp can't do anything about it. So Howard was necessary for that. Preemptive action solves that, but not in a way that beat Noize.
Right.
And then on corp side, I generally like kill decks for the most part. I really enjoy just putting the fear of God into the runner.
you and Will Brown, man.
Yeah, every successful deck that I've played has been a kill deck on corp side for the most part. I generally shy away from Wayland kill, and I don't know if that's because Wayland has traditionally been weaker than the rest of the corps, but I think thematically I've always enjoyed NBN as the kill faction. So like Butcher Shop, I was a big fan of Butcher Shop back in the day, which is NBN with a lot of money and mid-season replacements. And breaking news is to enable, you were playing Scorched Earth and Traffic Accident at that time. This is pre-boom.
Right.
But I always enjoyed the idea of NBN creating the story of a rogue hacker on the loose, and then also just, you know, controlling that story and just murking them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that deck was really cool because, again, you had multiple avenues of attack, right?
Yes.
So if the runner wasn't stealing, which would trigger their mid-season's ability, where you can then give them a bunch of tags and then blow them up, then you're scoring out Astra Scripts.
You can kill them through Breaking News. You can put what was cool about Butcher is you could put the runner in these weird, like, lose-lose situations where you have significantly more money than them, and you can go install advance on Breaking News, which would give them two tags as soon as you scored it.
Right.
So if they steal it, then Mid-Seasons is on, and you can just land them with, like, 20 tags. And if they don't steal it, you just score the Breaking News at the top of your turn, and then just kill them through meat damage.
Two tags, and then, you know.
Right.
And the perfect... with the advent of Traffic Accident, that's a way to do... 2 meat damage for only 1 influence, which what might have held back that archetype earlier would have been the fact that you maybe only can get 2 scorched in your deck, right?
Correct, yeah. So a lot of them were playing 3 scorched, 3 traffic, which would have been 15 influence. And because Near-Earth Hub is dumb, you got 2 extra influence to just do whatever you wanted with.
I don't know why they gave you so much influence for that.
Well, now it's fine. At the time, it was absolutely ridiculous because you can just play like 3 biotic or 2 biotic and like really good HP ice. You can play like EG1 and Architect, or you can just do whatever you wanted. But now, Near-Earth Hub is not really the problem NBN ID, I would say.
What, is there an NBN ID that you think maybe is a problem?
I don't think so. I think on the whole, NBN is in a really good spot from a balance perspective. Like, yeah, there are definitely some IDs that rise above some of the others, but I don't think any of them are inherent, like, problems for the game.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, too. I think there are very few problem IDs overall.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think the game is, as it, on the whole, in a really good spot right now. Like, I'm having a ton of fun playing Netrunner in the current environment. A couple of decks notwithstanding, but, like, on the whole, it's really good right now.
Right, right. And, you know, those decks only become problematic if it starts to become overly prevalent, because you can kind of, just on a fun factor, right? Like, okay, this is a matchup that I really don't like playing, so I'm going to try to figure out a way to beat him. And if I don't, that's fine, because I'm going to move on to someone else, and they probably aren't playing this same deck.
Right, so. Yeah. It's when you have the IG problem, or the industrial genomics problem, where it's not only is it the best deck, it's also horribly unfun to play against, and it's a significant representation at a tournament. Yeah. That's when you have a problem. But I don't think we're there yet.
No, I would agree with that. So, anyway, let's get back into talking about this specific store championship. Let's talk a little bit about what happened before we even got to the tournament, and we're going to do that in preemptive action. So this is kind of like a combo question, which is, what did you expect the meta to be like, and then what decks did you bring?
So playing against, or on Corp side, I expected a lot of CTM, and I was right. There was a lot of CTM on that day.
I was on CTM.
Yeah, you were on CTM. The reason I expected CTM was, I think that pound for pound, CTM doesn't have a whole ton of negative matchups. So in an unknown environment, you can bring CTM and expect to win a good percentage of your game. You're not going to get a freebie on all of them, but I think that you might be favored to win on a good percentage of them. And the other reason I expected a lot of CTM was the tournament was held like 2 to 3 days after Down the White Nile came out. An NGO Front is a card that's in that pack. An NGO Front is absolutely insane in CTM.
Yeah.
It's probably the best trap that's ever been printed, in my opinion. But NGO Front is not only insane in CTM, but it's insane in a lot of decks. But CTM was one of the more obvious places to put it.
Yeah. So listener, NGO Front, if you're not familiar, it's a neutral asset that's advanceable, and you can trash it at instant speed and gain 5 credits if it has 1 advancement counter, or 8 credits if it has 2 advancement counters or more.
Right. Okay. So in CTM, it accomplishes a couple different tasks. Number one, it's an advanceable. It's basically a trap. It doesn't do damage, but it is, for all intents and purposes, a trap. Mm-hmm. And it's going to bait the runner into the remote. Now, CTM is a deck that's going to install advance a lot, particularly on like GFI or Global Food Initiatives or quantum predictive models.
Right. Usually through a really taxing remote of like Data Raven Tollbooth is like the quintessential CTM remote, right?
Right. So it's not only is the remote annoying to get through, but you've got this thing at the end of it where not only do you get no agenda points, they get money. And if there's an upgrade like a Mumbat Virtual Tour in there, now you got to pay the Piper. You got to pay 5 to trash it and eat a CTM trace. Mm-hmm. So it's just awful to deal with that.
Yeah.
So CTM I expected. I also expected Cerebral Imaging, because CI is in that weird HB thing where they've got like 5 different decks that all share the same ID, and they all share a pretty decent chunk of cards. So it's really hard to suss out what CI deck you're playing against until it's too late sometimes.
Yeah. It's kind of doing the same thing that Butcher Shop did a while ago, right, where you'd sit across from NEH and you're like, are they on like the 2 or 3 Biotics NEH, or are they on the 2 or 3 Scorched Earth NEH?
Are they going to score out, or are they going to kill me? And that's actually a question that you have to ask against CI, because CI, you could be playing against like the reversed accounts, MCA, score deck, like that Wilfie played at Worlds.
Yeah.
Or am I up against Rewiring? Is this like Moons? Is this the Brain Damage deck with Helheim Servers and Brainstorm?
Right.
When it came to that NEH
situation, I really thought that was interesting, because now you kind of gotta figure out what they're on. Maybe you make some central runs, and that way you can like look at some cards and see, oh, he's on, I saw a traffic accident, and this is a kill deck. Okay, right? But with CI, maybe you can do that a little bit less. I don't know.
Yeah, Moons is the only one that's easy to figure out, because they're probably going to just install 3 assets in turn one.
Right.
So that one doesn't really count. But all the others, like the card pool is similar to the point where you can definitely run like 3 or 4 times and see cards shared by like 3 different archetypes. So like if I run and I see Ultraviolet Clearance, I get no information out of that, because this is a card that any CI deck would play regardless of the archetype. Anyway, on Runner's side, it was a bit more wide open. I did not expect Criminal, just because Criminal is really in a tough state of affairs right now.
Yeah, their whole faction's built around a really powerful run event in Account Siphon,
That
which
they can't play anymore.
as of right now is no longer with us. Although
Yeah.
there is a future Account Siphon that has sort of been unintentionally spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah,
But
they
it's
haven't.
different, it doesn't use the tags, you know.
It's cool. I like that. And yeah, Diversion of Funds is the name of the card. We won't talk about that too much, but yeah, for this tournament, Criminal was I didn't think it was really a non-factor. I thought maybe a Rogue Leela deck shows up, but nothing much. I figured a lot of Anarch and Shaper.
Yeah.
I think that like Comrade's Val, so Val with just money and breakers and like Turning Wheel for multi-access would be popular. I figured Haley would be popular, similar to the lock deck, similar to what you'd play against at Worlds. I figured those would be popular. And the Corp deck I ended up playing, I really liked the matchup against those decks in particular. In testing, I had performed really, really well against them. And I kind of just made a meta read. On Corp side, I ended up playing NBN Making News, door to door Making News with Aryabhata Tech and consulting visits.
And so, listener, again, if you want to, you can just fast forward. This is fine.
Yeah,
We'll just move right along. No worries.
I'll preemptively apologize, but yeah, there's probably less people who don't like this deck than who really hated Noise. There's less vitriol going around door to door Making News, but
Yeah, it's
door to door.
go ahead.
If you've never had the displeasure of playing against Door to Door, it's a current from Wayland, three cost, two influence. Basically, it says when the runner's turn starts, you trace one, and if you're successful, you do a meat damage if they're tagged, and if they aren't tagged, they take a tag instead. So in Making News, you get two free credits for traces, right? So every turn, this is a trace three, which you have to pay through, or else you get a tag or a meat damage, which is a big deal.
Right. And the
So you
only
might be
ways to
saying.
get rid of that are to steal an agenda or play a current of your own.
Right. And to make matters worse, you run three Aryabhata Tech, which is a two res, three trash asset from NBN, which says whenever there's a successful trace, the runner loses a credit and the corp gains one. So this trace that you cannot avoid becomes this awful tax on your credit pool, and it doesn't even require the corp to do anything. It just happens at the start
Right.
of the turn. The counterplay is to play Link in your deck, and the reason I liked the matchup was exactly that reason. There's almost no Link running around.
Sometimes you hit like an Eddie Kim, but he's only
Ed,
playing
Ed
one
Kim,
link,
Ed Kim
so.
typically is not going to play additional Link cards. Your real problem matchups are going to be Sunny, which I didn't expect, and I kind of lucked out because a player from the SF region played Sunny to a store champ win like the next week, and I think that that might inspire some people to play Sunny. And I dodged it by virtue of just being a little bit early.
Nice.
The other really bad matchup is Geist, and I just kind of figured that Geist isn't super great right now, and just kind of prayed that no one would play him. And I don't think he was even present.
Yeah, Geist is a runner that needs to set up his engine a little bit, and with the popularity of the CI and controlling the message decks that can just like put some cards on the table first turn and then immediately pressure you, like Geist is just not good for that, I
Yeah,
think.
Geist
So,
has some really negative matchups, so I just kind of hoped that no one would play him.
yeah.
And then on Runner's side, I was going to play Max from the very beginning, but the Max deck I ended up playing was a little bit different. We have a private testing group, some friends and I from the area. You might have heard of them. It's like Spags and Aaron Andrews, Joe Shupp.
Yeah,
We have a
pretty
private
much like
slack.
the greatest players ever.
I mean, multi-time top 16 competitors, Aaron
Woo,
Andrews,
woof,
Scott Pagliarini,
hot,
whatever.
woo.
So Zach Cavas from I think West Virginia is in that group as well, and he gave me this Max list. We had been before Worlds, we had been testing this Max list that we kind of called Control Max,
Sure.
and the reason we called it Control Max was because it had absolutely no multi-axis in it. There was not a Maker's Eye or Turning Wheel, nothing like that. No legwork, no nothing.
So you're not
Instead, the
pressuring the centrals, like you're strictly like playing exactly the cards that you need to prevent them from winning and then like doing your killing blow or whatever,
Well, you
right?
are still pressuring centrals because your main method of pressure is Maw, a card
Oh.
that a lot of people say is bad. And it's not a bad card, it's just not good in every deck. There's definitely decks that want to play Maw, and this was one of them. Because the whole game plan was you play Tap Worm and SatCon for constant money, so you don't care if the corp gets rich. In fact,
Sure.
you're kind of okay with that. You're playing Cutlery to just kill ice on sight, and you're just running repeatedly with this free money dripping in. and mine cards consistently. So they can't protect their centrals because you'll just kill the ice and maw cards out of their hand. And if they try to score out of a remote, you play a couple Stim Hacks and Heat Breakers. So Black Orchestra, MK Ultra, Paperclip. So you can remote camp pretty well. You have two levies, so you get two trips through the deck, which means that you get multiple instances of Tap Worms and Sacrificial Constructs. It was just a nightmare to play against for a lot of different corporations. The downside was that you had a really bad CI matchup. And the other downside that I was running into was the SatCon Tap Worm combo was your max, you're milling cards every turn, was sometimes tough to actually get on the board. So there were times where your drip econ never really came to fruition.
Yeah, you know, when I've played Haley and stuff, sometimes you hold on to the SatCons, right? So that you can like run a central, like you kind of build up the SatCon Tapworm combo in your hand. And then you can run a central, and then you play both your SatCons and a Tapworm, and now like you can't get rid of it. And you just don't have that option as max sometimes.
There were some cool plays you could do. Like one of my favorite things to do was Retrieval Run and then play SatCon, which is a legal play because by the time Retrieval Run says when you it's a run on archives, and if it's successful, you can install a program from your heap at no cost. Now Tapworm requires a successful central run, but the interesting ruling is that by the time the run is successful for Retrieval Run, you can then choose Tapworm as a legal target to bring back.
Interesting. Okay,
Which,
okay.
yeah, it's cool, but the problem is then you're paying three for a Tap Worm, and if you don't have a Sacrificial Construct, they can just purge it.
Right.
So it's just a lot of moving parts. So what happened was literally the night before the tournament, Zach Havas gave us this max deck, which kind of shared the same thesis statement of applying pressure to all areas, so HQ, R&D, and the remote. But it did it in a different way. You weren't playing Tap Worm and Sacrificial Construct. Instead, for Drip Econ, you have Data Foldings. You're still playing Maw, but the big thing that you're playing is deep data mining for R&D at multi-access and a legwork. So
The
deep
deep
data
data mining is really
mining—that's
I think that's the interesting part of this,
that's the
right?
interesting include. Deep data mining basically it's a three-cost run event on R&D, and if you're successful, you get one additional access per unused MU up to four. Well, it just so happens that Maw gives you two extra MU, so you're probably going to have a lot of extra MU floating around. And a lot of times you don't need all three breakers. Sentries are kind of down and out in the metagame at the moment. So a lot of times you don't even need to install the MK Ultra. So a lot of times you have four MU available anyway. So you're getting the full value out of your deep data mining. And seeing five cards is just absolutely insane. And
Turns
it's
out
gonna
that's real good.
yeah, it turns out seeing a good, like, what is that, like 1/7 of the corpse deck is
Yeah.
good. You have obviously you have same old things in the deck, so you can recur it. So it's just a really great way of applying pressure.
Now, why do you like the deep data mining over, say, indexing, which I've seen in like the comrades lists?
Indexing is more hate against it, is the reason I prefer the deep data mining. Indexing, you can, as the corp, you can get around it by like installing a Miraju to
Sure.
shuffle the deck. That's a really popular one, particularly in Jinteki. It's almost an auto include within a lot of like Jinteki Glacier decks,
Yeah,
as
I'd
much
argue that.
indexing
Yep.
as there is. There are still instant speed shuffle effects, so I'm thinking of things like an over-advanced Project Atlas you can use to shuffle your deck. And indexing requires a second run, and there's definitely times where you can't get in a second time or don't want to get in a second time.
Yeah, I've been using a tapestry as like sort of like a soft indexing counter,
Tapestry.
because it's strength six with three subs, and it's like lose a click, the corp draws a card, and the corp puts a card from HQ on top of R&D, right? So then it doesn't matter as much for the first indexing run if they're running on click one or two, but they have to break it, and it costs like seven or eight to break with their decoder, nine if they're on Black Orchestra. Yeah. So.
The other thing about indexing that we weren't too keen on was if you're playing indexing, you probably have to play Mad Dash as well. And Mad Dash with only one indexing, because that's probably all we were going to fit in, and no turning wheel for additional multi-axis didn't really feel like a really great include.
Sure.
So just getting the raw accesses out of deep data mining seemed better. So the other spicy include in this max deck is Ottman for your AI and mythic solution.
Ottman, but that's like three influence. You're
Yeah, Ottman's three
crazy.
influence. Why don't you just play Turtle Schneider? That seems like a better card. Well, on paper it is, but Turtle requires a couple of things. The biggest one being setup.
Yeah, you gotta
There are
charge that
times where
sucker up.
Yeah, you got to charge it. And if you're not going to charge, then you got to play Dean Listers. And we don't have room for Dean Listers, and it doesn't really have any synergy with any of the rest of the deck.
Right.
But the other thing is that the decks running all Mythic have solutions specifically to beat Turtle. The biggest one is out of, like, Brain Rewiring CI, they have Cyberdeck's Virus Suite. Mm-hmm. And if the Cyberdeck Virus Suite is in Archives, you can no longer run Archives ever again for more than one Turtle counter.
Right.
And if they wall off both the Centrals, you can't run for Turtle counters ever again. I played Rewiring at Worlds this year, and that was my solution, was just get the CVS in the bin, and then they can't run for Turtle counters, and they may as well have just not ever played it.
Right, right. You've totally nullified that card.
Exactly. Oddman, on the other hand, I can install Oddman 3 to be 2 out of 3 ice in that deck. It will break Loki as well as Excalibur.
Right.
And the original version of the deck played a Data Sucker. And so with Oddman and Data Sucker, exactly, you can play Oddman at 3 and get Data Sucker counters to get through Mother Goddess. So it solves all the solutions. Now, I cut the Data Sucker on the day for a second Stim hack, which I maintain is a little bit better. Because sure. Data Sucker has some anti-synergy with Deep Data Mining. And also, I didn't expect to play against Brain Rewiring. Data Sucker is only a really great card in that matchup if you're playing against Rewiring.
Yeah. And so, listener, if you are not super familiar with what the Mythic CI thing is, basically they only have a handful of ice in their deck, and they're playing only Mythic ice. It's ice that doesn't have subtypes of their own. Usually they gain the subtypes of other ice that's in play. We're talking about specifically Mother Goddess. Or when you encounter them, the court picks another piece of ice and it gains those subtypes, which would be Loki. But if you only have Mother Goddess and Loki, then they don't gain any more subtypes. So then the runner needs an AI breaker. And that's why Atman is so awesome in this matchup, because there's once you have it down, there's nothing that the corp can do to stop you, really.
Yeah, and I mean, Atman has multiple applications as well. Like, it's not a card you install every single matchup. In fact, I think I only installed it twice on the day, but sure. Both times it completely saved me.
Yeah, so I had similar expectations to you, Andrew, where I didn't think CI was going to be super prevalent. You know, maybe we saw one or two in the store, but I was not predicting that we would actually run into that much CI. So also, I got really tired of playing like super careful Shaper, where you have to have, like, you know, all these different tech cards for different matchups. And I know that some people really enjoy the toolbox approach, but I kind of wanted to go the opposite direction.
Yeah, I can't play Shaper for exactly that reason. I hate playing cards that do nothing in my deck in certain matchups.
Yeah.
Yes, I can't do it either.
I mean, I get why Laguna and Levy is, like, good together, so that you can just draw up everything you need and ditch what you don't. But that's just not me, man. I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go with Anarch, because I think you can slap a couple indexings and some Amakua in there, and you can create a lot of early game pressure. Honestly, kind of reminds me of how Criminal used to play with, like, a Good Stuff Andy type build, right?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you get Data Sucker in Faction. You get a really good AI Breaker, probably the best in the game right now. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, yeah. So I was looking around online. I didn't want to play Val, just because I am too much of a hipster to play what is generally deemed the best. But I found a very similar Omar list. And Omar has always intrigued me. I think he is kind of like Kit, where you can bring some upfront pressure. He forces you to spread your ice out because of that pseudo sneak door effect. So I decided to pack in an Omar list, and I was pleased with how that went. On the corp side, I had been playing NEH with calibration testing and, like, team sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
Very, like, an old Russian NEH.
Right, right.
And calibration testing is an upgrade that you can turn into an advancement counter by trashing it. So if you have one on the table, you can throw down a 3-cost agenda on top of it, fast advance it. And then team sponsorship says when you score an agenda, you can install a card from your hand or archives and put it back on the table. So you can target that very same calibration testing. So you kind of get this little engine running, and it's all well and good. NEH has a lot of built-in draw, so, like, that was fine. But I don't know. There's something about it that feels off, feels inconsistent. And eventually I just said, wouldn't this just be better in controlling the message so that whenever they went to trash my shit, then they just took a tag?
Yeah, that's the logic, right? It's calibration testing is only two to trash, so you have to guard it a little bit more in an NEH deck, whereas in CTM, it just guards itself by virtue of your ID ability, because now you have to pay through the trace or clear the tag, and it's more click-intensive, it's more money, so... it's kind of like Sansan in that regard. Like Sansan, City Grid was always insane out of controlling the message, and calibration testing is kind of the same principle.
Yeah, exactly. And team sponsorship is one of my favorite cards because it forwards your tempo by doing what you want to be doing anyway. It gives you these installs either in the form of recursion or just building your board state up more as you score out. So it sort of kind of snowballs. It just is really good as a tempo card, and CTM is often played very much like a tempo strategy. So,
yeah.
You know, it all kind of goes well together. And it was also a deck that I knew would be pretty good. So I said, yeah, you know what? This is my first store champ of the year. I want to bring something that's going to be pretty decent. And so that must have been what many people thought. As you predicted, there would be a lot of controlling the message, and sure enough, there was.
Yeah, controlling the message is all over the place. The other thing about team sponsorship is, like, the worst feeling in the world on runner side is when you trash the Daily Business Show and then they just score and bring it back with team sponsorship.
Yeah.
Like, that is just awful 100% of the time. So the sponsorship is – and it sucks to trash sponsorship, too. It's four to trash again and eat a CTM trace, so –
yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, exactly. I'm never trashing that card. I'll probably never touch that.
It's, to me, it's kind of like the museum effect, right? Where if it's on the board and you decide that you're not going to deal with it, then you're not really going to trash anything else ever again, because you know that it's just a waste of your time. It's going to come back anyway.
Yeah, you got to either trash everything or you got to trash nothing. And sometimes the correct play is to trash nothing, and sometimes the correct play is to trash everything.
Yeah. If you're at 5 points, then you stop trashing everything and just try to find that one last, like, GFI that's hiding.
Yeah, exactly. Then you just got to put the gas pedal on and win.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's talk a little bit about how our decks did. And we're going to do that in our tournament report segment, the official segment known as Special Report. So, Andrew, you start off the day. You got Max. You got Making News. How did your first couple rounds go?
My first round, I played this guy named Bai, and he was pretty awful at the game. I got 2 freebie wins out of it, so that felt pretty good.
Yeah. You know, I saw you just, like, patrolling around, scoping.
Yeah, I was sniping everyone's decks. No, the guy running the tournament, Jason, asked me to help out on judge calls, so I just did that for a little while that round. But I always like to start off my tournament with a sweep, but I like to start it off with a real sweep and not like a bye sweep. The first round, it's like playing in a Netrunner tournament for me is like getting in a fight, right? I'm nervous until I take that first punch and I play that first game, and then all the nerves go away for the rest of the day.
Sure.
And the buy, that didn't happen, so they just kind of sat there for like an extra hour.
Yeah.
It is a drag, but it was good seeing my friends as well, and just kind of hanging out with them, seeing how their games went as well. So
yeah,
but yeah, starting off 6-0, good feeling.
Yeah, right. I played Jason, the tournament organizer, to start, and he was on, I think, it might have been a good stuff Val build. He was on some kind of
Anarch. Yeah, he was on a Val deck. I know he had Acacia in that build, because I was talking to him a little bit later, right. And he remarked that he got, like, 22 credits off Acacia. Acacia's that hardware that's new, where if the court purges, you trash it, and you gain a credit for each virus counter that was purged.
Right.
So don't know exactly what he was doing. He was probably on, like, data suckers and imps and other viruses, but
it was basically like a good stuff Anarch build, but then he put in Plague, which you pick a server when you install it, and you get 2 virus tokens to just build up, like, Acacia credits.
Yeah.
And Virus Breeding Ground in, like, Yusuf.
Okay, so he's playing a Yusuf deck. Yeah, I think that deck gets a little bit cooler when the spoiled Anarch ID comes out, Freedom Kumalo.
Yeah.
He's kind of like Wizard with virus counters. I think then you've got a deck going. But that's cool. That's cool that he was trying it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was cool. But the other part of it that was cool, he was also on Asa Group, which is the new HB ID.
Okay.
And what happened to him with Acer Group is the same thing that happens to everyone that I've seen with Acer Group, which is where you build a super badass remote that has like 5 upgrades, and then you singleize both your centrals, and then you lose out of your centrals.
Yeah, so, the other thing that I've seen happen with Acer Group is they build a giant 5-deep remote server, and then they can not res all the ice in it because you're just broke as a joke the whole game.
Right.
So that's the other problem that I've run into with Acer Group. But yeah,
I know that code eventually.
Spags has been playing around with Asa Group. He's playing like an upgrades hell deck that's on NetRunnerDB. It also uses zero influence, and I'm really excited to try that out.
Influence is a crutch.
It is a crutch. It's really cool. It's got like Heinlein grids and Mason Bellamy, Strongbox, false leads.
Yeah, the whole shebang.
It's bonkers. Yeah, anyway.
That's awesome. Well, anyway, so Jason is just ahead of the meta, and this summer everyone's going to be playing exactly what he played, but
right.
He was too soon, and so that got me a sweep too. So then who'd you end up playing in the second round, which was really your first match?
I played some guy named Graham. It was really weird how that worked out.
There was a Graham at this tournament. Yeah. I mean, he sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, he was all right. He had his moments.
Andrew, this was the first of a couple times when we would play each other, which I thought was fun. I had met you at a tournament in Madison over the summer, and so it was like, oh yeah, familiar face, what's going on, how you been, you know, catching up.
Right. Yeah, I think I swept you at that tournament in Madison. I went on to win that as well.
I was playing CTM before it was cool again.
You're playing CTM with like, what's that card from Terminal Directive?
Oh,
the long-term investment.
Long-term investment, because no one ever trashed it. And then I was like, no, cool, I'll click for 10.
I had to read that card when you rezzed it against me. I had no idea what that did.
Man, it was pretty bad. I also brought Adam to that tournament, and he was...
Oh yeah, you were on Adam against my Ag Infusion. That was interesting.
That was really rough because you had so many Chiyashis, and the only breaker in the Adam deck is Overmind. So
yeah, that's pretty awkward.
Cool, I'll break for.
But this time, I started off playing my Max against your CTM, and I found 2 Hacktivists in my opening hand, and I snap kept it.
Oh my god, this was a lesson in hubris.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you learned something about Hacktivist meeting this game, I think.
So he plays this Hacktivist, and it's like turn one, right? And I put down like the Banker's Group, the Business Show, and I was like, oh man, I got a Beal in my hand, and I really don't want to lose that. So, and you were joking, you're like, yeah, just score out the 15 minutes, it's fine. And so then I draw my mandatory draw, it's a 15 minutes, and I was like, all right, that's fine, I'll score it out. Ha!
Yeah, exactly.
Take that. And then I didn't res them, and so then you played your second Hacktivist meeting, and I was like, son of a bitch. So, like 5 turns later, I stash a Beal amongst many installables on the board, so I score that out, and I was like, sweet, I got rid of the second Hacktivist meeting, it's good. And I didn't res them again, and you played the third Hacktivist meeting, and I was so mad at myself.
What are the odds that I have the third Hacktivist meeting in my hand?
Yeah, who runs 3
evidently
Hacktivists
pretty good
in their decks? Everyone does. So, yeah, needless to say, Max won. You won.
You resed out and then went down to, like, 1 card in hand, and I'm like, okay, I feel pretty good about this.
Yeah, it was terrible. So.
Yeah.
But then... switch sides, and I'm on Omar. You're feeling good because he is not a link runner.
Correct. Yeah, Omar. Yeah, I played 0 link runners on the day. Oh, the other thing about the Max deck that I have to bring up. Also, shouts out to myself for knocking my Bitbox all over the floor that game.
Oh my god,
that was great. That was a good moment. Like that's
it was
I'm
everywhere.
Like, yeah, it was a catastrophe. I almost asked for a time extension, but I'm like, no, I'll just make this really fast.
You don't need this.
Anyway, so yeah, we moved on to Making News versus Omar.
And you had a decent setup, right? You
had I had most of what I wanted. I had ice for at least 2 of the 3 centrals. I'm fine with not icing archives at least immediately because you only get 1 of those runs, whereas if I leave a central open, you can just run it forever.
Exactly.
And I did find Aryabhata Tech and a Door-to-Door. So eventually I'm getting the lock going. The problem is you play Currents in your deck, which normally isn't a big deal, but... I couldn't find another Door-to-Door for a little while.
You like could not draw a Consulting Visit to save your life.
No, I needed like exactly Consulting Visit because you were running on low credits, and I'm like, I could have played Hard Hitting News. I didn't have that.
Absolutely.
I didn't have Consulting Visit to play Door-to-Door to get the lock going again.
I
couldn't find an Archives Ice.
Oh my gosh, you couldn't find anything.
You played Pagot and just ran my hand a million times.
I had a street peddler on the table when you played that door to door, and then you rezzed your Aryavata tech, which is behind some unknown ice, right?
Yeah, I think it was behind a macrophage, which was like the best ice in my deck.
Yeah, and so the macrophage Aryavata tech thing is terrible because if I don't have the 9 credits it takes to break macrophage, or 12, I guess, with Black
Orchestra. I think it's 12 with Black Orchestra, yeah.
Oh my god. Then you end up gaining 4 credits and I lose 4 credits because all the traces go off or whatever.
Yeah, and so. You're an Anarch, so it stands to reason you might have viruses in your deck, so I might get additional value out of it. I'm looking at your list, I think the only one is Amakua, but that's still pretty good. I'm still fine purging that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I could also trash it and remove it from the game, too. Macrophage has other text on it.
But that Street Peddler had a secret spicy DDoS on it, right?
Yeah, the DDoS was a bummer.
So you've got the door-to-door down. You're about to start, like, taxing the bazookas out of me because you're tracing 3 to tag me at the start of every turn, and I really don't want that. So I pop the DDoS at instant speed because it was already on the Street Peddler, so I get, like, a bunch of clicks this turn. I ran your hand I forget why. I think I was just trying to maximize the DDoS.
Yeah, just get the access.
And I trashed another Aryabata tech out of your hand, and then I could run the remote and dodge the macrophage because of the DDoS that was in play, preventing you from resing anything, and then I trashed that. So I set you back 2 Aryabatas, which slowed you down enough, I think?
It's not the end of the world, but it's not good. We really want that card to get the lock on for sure. Like, door-to-door is more important, but Aryabata tech is really kind of makes the whole deck come together. So losing 2 of them, and I can't find that card on demand the way that I can find door-to-door or hard-hitting news. So
right.
I had to shuffle them back in with preemptives and just kind of hope I draw them the hard way.
Yeah, I think I eventually got either like 2 or 5 points before you landed a hard-hitting news.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I got flooded pretty early that game. I know at one point I had to go consulting visit for a special report just to get the agendas out of my hand. Because I think I had about 6 points in my hand for a good portion of like the mid game.
Yeah. But then eventually, like, you didn't ice up R&D because you couldn't find anything to do anything. And
yeah,
I think I eventually won off that. Either that or an Omar one. Run
by. Right, something like that. Yeah, you got, I think it was like 2 foods and the 3-pointer, the Utopia fragment.
Yeah, yeah. So then we both split and we're at 3-1 each.
Right.
And we go on to play some other people.
Yeah. So round 3, I end up against my friend Lucas, who's from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Lucas was part of our testing house for Worlds, so I know basically exactly what decks he's on because he was pretty upfront about the fact that he basically has not played Netrunner very much since Worlds.
Oh, wow.
He's on Locke Haley, very akin to what Wilfie won Worlds with, and Brain Rewiring CI. More specifically, he's on the variant of Brain Rewiring CI where instead of playing like Punitive Counter-Strike and more global foods, he's playing a version with a singleton 24/7 news cycle. The logic being is that you can play a longer version of the combo, which will work through some hate cards like Biometric Spoofing or Citadel Sanctuary. Because what you end up doing is you fire the Brain Rewiring and you score what's the meat damage card? Show of Force. But then on your last click, you play 24/7 to trigger the Show of Force again when they can't defend against it.
Oh, gotcha. So the first time that they score Show of Force, that's what gets rid of, like, the Citadel.
Yeah, that'll burn through the hate cards. And then the second Show of Force from the 24/7 news cycle will just kill them.
That's pretty interesting.
It works because that's what I played at Worlds. And I did have to play that combo quite a bit because there was just hate all over the place. But we played the – which match – did we play first? I think we played the rewiring match first, and it went just about as well as it could go. R&D was open, so I got a deep data mining off. That did 2 things for me. It got me a Show of Force, and it also trashed the contract killer, which is the other way that he could kill me. And if that card's in the bin, then he has to get it back with archive memories, and that's just resources I'm making him use. Eventually he gets his servers iced up, and at this point I'm understanding that my out in this game, he's on the mythic ice suite that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
My out is Ottman, and that's the only card in my deck that can really win me the game. So eventually I draw into Retrieval Run, Ottman goes in the bin. I Retrieval Run to get Ottman, and I put it at 4, knowing that if he has Loki Mother Goddess on HQ, I can't get into HQ. But I kind of just make the call at Shock because he has two ice on HQ and two ice or one ice on R&D. And I'm guessing that the ice on R&D is Loki. And the ice on, I knew that the innermost ice on HQ was the Mother Goddess. And so it stands to reason that the one on the outside of HQ would be Excalibur. Right. Excalibur doesn't stop me. It just cuts down the number of runs I make. So I run HQ with the Ottoman 4, and I find a 2-pointer, so I go to 4 points.
Nice.
He continues drawing and doing his thing, and then I run one more time, and I get a elective upgrade, and I win.
Oh my gosh.
So I win.
Just gotta get accesses, man.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta, like, the thing about rewiring that you have to understand is, like, you are on a clock, and half the cards in your deck don't do anything. So you need to understand which cards in your deck do something, and what your out is against that game plan. For some decks, it's going to be like preventing the kill and forcing them to score out. So like if you're playing Yharnam Mercs, that is a card that most rewiring decks can't beat in any way.
Hmm.
And sometimes it's just you got to go faster than them. You got to have a solution for the mythic ice and get the accesses to win.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just got to get lucky.
And that's what happened for you, right?
That's what happened for me. Yeah, I think it was a combination of luck and just understanding what my outs were in the matchup. And then on Corp's side, for Making News, he's on the Locke Haley, like I said. And I actually, in testing, love the matchup against Locke Haley. Because I play Macrophage to deal with Tapworm, which also kind of deals with SatCon. Because if you play Macrophage, we'll first purge the Tapworm. So they'd have to SatCon it, and then it will. The second trace fires to trash the Tapworm.
Right.
It's really good at burning through Tapworms. Additionally, Haley has a lot of drip econ, but she has to run to get it, which opens her up to hard hitting news.
Hmm.
And if she doesn't stick a Tapworm, then I can usually get the lock going. Then she can get her money engine going, and my ice sucks for her to break. Like I don't really have any friendly ice outside of maybe Resistor pop-up window that Haley really wants to have any business breaking.
Yeah.
So in testing, I really liked the matchup, and it kind of paid off here. I got the lock going. Eventually, he just broke himself getting into the remote. I had, he was double Newshound protecting the Aryabhata tech, which is which is a nightmare for him to deal with because he's on Femme Fatale, and he had already installed the Femme Fatale.
Oh my God.
I think some other ice. So it broke his economy to make this run, opened him up to hard hitting. And now he's running for single accesses and R&D through a Gutenberg. And the cool thing with Gutenberg is Aryabhata tech. No one breaks the Gutenberg. No one ever beats the trace. So most
no
of the time,
no one breaks Gutenberg ever.
Yeah, Gutenberg just says you take a tag, like straight up.
Right. It's better than Data Raven for giving people tags. Absolutely.
On R&D, absolutely. But he's running through Gutenberg and ostensibly doesn't do anything because he's tagged me. But with Aryabhata tech up, I still get the credit and he still loses one.
Oh my God.
And eventually I just get the kill off. So it was pretty straightforward. The game plan against Haley on Making News is just wait for her to break her own econ. And either you're going to do it through door-to-door, or she's going to do it by making some run that she shouldn't have made.
Yeah. She has to play it pretty perfectly.
Exactly. Haley's got to get really lucky, I think, to beat Making News. I think it's a pretty positive matchup for door-to-door.
Gotcha. I also had Gutenberg in my CTM deck, and I love Gutenberg. You know, people put three.
Have always loved that ice suite, the positional ice on the servers.
It's basically like a fourth Data Raven, right, in your deck,
right?
In terms of just ice that tags them. Plus, it then defends all of your QPMs. I think it went out of favor. I think Gutenberg went out of favor when everyone had David in their deck because it's just one Data token to break.
Yeah.
But like David has long since disappeared from the majority of meta decks, I think.
Definitely. Our early version of Max, the version with Tapworm, played David, and it's tough to play without it sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so my third round I'm playing against Dane, and Dane and I have now thoroughly established sort of this rapport where I get really lucky and he gets really
hates
not
that
lucky.
Too.
He can't draw anything that he ever wants to draw, and he'll early on, like turn two, turn three, he might not ice up R&D, thinking like, okay, it's fine. He might get a point or two out of this, and as what happened in this tournament, he was on like Ag Infusion or something. And I ran his R&D Got a Nisei. Sweet. Steal that. Ran it again. Philotic. Great. Steal that. So I basically just, like, ravaged his lightly defended centrals.
Right.
Eventually he gets, like, a fully charged MCA austerity policy, so he's, like, just waiting to draw into a 5-3 and then score that. But I happen to fall upon, like, a polop, so I can trash that.
Yeah, you just trash it as soon as he clicks it up to 3.
Yeah, and eventually I think he gets a Chiyashi rezzed, but I have those employee strikes. So normally Ag Infusion can really mess you up because you run on an unrezzed ice. They use their ID ability, and they can move you to a different server, so you'd faceplant into the Chiyashi when you're not
ready. Basically, once they res a Chiyashi on the outside of a server, all their unrezzed ice is Chiyashi for the rest of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you have employee strike, which I did.
Unless you have E-strike, right, exactly.
Right. So he got pretty messed up there. And then he was really excited when I sat down with CTM because he was expecting it, just like you and I were. And he teched really heavily. I think he had 2 Salset Slums in his deck. He's on Ed Kim. Salset Slums gets around both the E-strike trace, both the CTM trace and the, if he scores an Aries, an enhanced security, it gets
correct.
Around that.
Correct, yeah.
Because you're not trashing
changed,
it. You're
they changed that ruling on Salset Slums, yeah.
Yeah, so if he had gotten those out early, I would have been really messed up because I would have had nothing on the board. But instead, he drew and drew and drew and drew and then didn't find slums or indexing. He was like fully set up, couldn't find an indexing to save his life. And that darn Gutenberg was keeping him out because you can't just afford to make a single access on RNG.
Yeah, you're not going to pay 6 with Eddie Kim to beat that trace just for a single access.
Yeah. So I swept Dane, much to his chagrin.
Dane. I've played Dane a couple of times, and he's one of those guys who he's a great guy. He actually saved the tournament on the day because it was awesome. The iOS app NRTM decided to repair people who had already played for no real reason, none of us could figure out how to fix it. So Dane actually had to step in and manually pair everything. But Dane hates it when he has the odds with him and they don't pan out.
Absolutely. Well, it's super frustrating. It's like a frustrating thing to happen to you.
Yeah. But it just seems to happen every single time I see Dane at a tournament. It happens to him at least once without fail.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that I had no business winning those, but they should have been a lot closer games than I think they ended up.
Right,
winning.
Right.
So round 4, we're almost to the cut. It's a 4-round Swiss. So who did you play?
Round 4, I ended up playing with Jerry, who I think was undefeated at the time, and I was the second place player. I was the only player at 6-2. He was the only player undefeated, I was the only player at 5-1, and he was the only player at undefeated. So the way the math worked out is that we could just take the ID and both guarantee that we get into the cut, and we have a really good shot. He's certainly locked for first seed. I'm pretty much locked for second. So we end up taking the ID. So I only played 2 real rounds of Netrunner and Swiss, but we end up playing, out the round just for fun. Against the store champ, we had never played each other. He's like, do you want to just play it out for fun? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But I ended up getting the sweep on him in the fun round. So I'm the whole time kicking myself, like, should have just taken the sweep. Should have just played it out.
Should have just played it out, man.
But, yeah. Thankfully, if I was in danger of going to third seed, I probably would not have taken the ID. I would have played it out. But the difference between first and second seed in a double limb bracket is not huge. The difference between second and third is a bit more because it means that the way that a double elimination bracket works is whoever's the higher seed in the first round gets to choose what side they play.
Right.
So I just wanted to be first or second seed. It didn't really make a difference which.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But the games were good. I ended up doing exactly what I did to you on his CTM, where I got a Hacktivist and he could not clear it for the rest of the game, and I won off deep data mining.
Oh, yeah.
And then against his runner, he's on Val. It looked very much like Comrade's Val. It was a much quicker game than it was against Lucas, where it was a bit more. I didn't have to get the lock on because he ran early, got hard-hitting news, and then died from the boom. So,
as one does.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who sees that coming?
Yeah.
To be fair, like, I play most NBN decks are not playing consulting visits, so the odds of me having that so early is not great unless I play consulting visit.
Sure.
So the line makes sense. It just didn't end up panning out.
Yeah. Also, I misspoke earlier. I said that I swept Dane, but actually, I lied. I had a double advanced. I know, I'm a liar. I'm a big fat liar.
Oh, no.
I double advanced a GFI in my scoring remote, and it was going to be, I think, the winning agenda, probably. Maybe it only brought me to six. Doesn't matter. That's when he finally found his indexing. And, and he was already at like 5 points, I think. So yeah, it was a CTF, close game, but he...
CTM hates indexing.
Yeah. Well, what can you do, right?
Exactly. You play Crystal Grid. That's what you can do.
I have an influence left.
Yeah, I'm looking at your list right now. You do have an influence.
It's a solid 11 out of 12 influence right now. Slots are tight, man. Slots are tight. Yeah, so then, anyway, while you were off playing fun games with Jerry or whatever, I was in the thick of it. I was at 4-2, and there was like four of us who were all at 4-2.
Yeah, the last couple slots for the cut were going to be really tight.
Yeah, yeah. And if any of the 4-2s sweep, then they're definitely in. But if you split, you're probably vying for a strength of schedule tie to like get you into the cut.
It's only right. Yeah. Basically, the way the math was going to work out is my strength of schedule was better than Brandon, who ended up in third seed. But fourth seed was going to go to a 5-3, like almost guaranteed. It was just a matter of who had a good enough strength of schedule to sneak into that fourth seed slot.
Yeah, yeah. And there's nothing like traveling to an away tournament to then play someone that you normally play with every week. And
it sucks. Yeah, it happens to me every tournament without fail. Like this tournament, I played Lucas at Gen Con last year. I played a guy who plays at my store all the way in Indianapolis. So
it's like, why did we drive here?
Yeah, exactly. I drive like 6 hours to play someone I play every week. Yeah.
So Kevin and I ended up meeting up for this final round, and we're both like on the verge of making the cut. So like that kind of sucks, because probably only one of us is going to get in. And I started off with like, I was playing my CTM deck first, and I got like crazy draw, right? Like first turn, you put down a Bankers and a Business Show. Then second turn, you top deck another Bankers. So even if he's trying to like maintain you, he has to have Bonkers Economy at the start to
avoid. Exactly. Yeah, that's the dream right there.
Yeah. I hit him with a hard-hitting news a couple turns in. He was on 8 credits, though. And he and I had a discussion afterwards where like, normally, if they have 8 credits to clear all the tags, then your hard-hitting news is like not very good. But in this case, I bought me like probably a 2 or 3 turn scoring window.
Yeah, it's the value hard-hitting news is what that is.
The value hard-hitting news.
That's what you call that.
And when I scored that Beal off the table, just regular old-fashioned style while he's clearing tags, I can trigger a team sponsorship to bring back a calibration testing, and then I can fast advance Beals from that point on. I think I drew like a Beal and on one turn, and so then he runs R&D and like runs into some stuff that he doesn't care about, or maybe he like trashed it. Because then the next card that I draw was another Beal, and I can just fast advance these Beals as soon as they show up, as long as I got the money to risk cal testing. So,
right.
So he was getting terrible luck on R&D. I'm not saying that I did well because of luck, but I'm saying it's a factor.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it also helps that you play Daily Business Show. So,
hey, you know what? It's a good card. What can
you
say?
Yeah. It's pretty good. You make your own luck.
Yeah, that's right. So then Kevin and I had to make the decision on whether or not we're going to 2-for-1. And
right.
We were both kind of cold on the idea going into the first game. I ended up stomping him, though. And so, you know, I basically left it in his court. Like, do you want to play the second one? Because if we split, there's a chance that neither of us makes the cut. But he was like, yeah, you know what? Let's play it out. We came here to play.
Yeah, and if anyone really listening doesn't know what a 2-for-1 is, a 2-for-1 is the idea where if both players in the last round of the Swiss are kind of on the bubble for making the cut, and one of them needs a sweep to get in, and a split actually would split both of you out. A 2-for-1 is the concept of playing one game that decides the outcome of both. So you would play one game, and the winner, it's winner take all at that point.
Yeah.
It is of dubious legality from a tournament perspective. Letter of the law is that you technically can't do it. But it's one of those rules, kind of like scouting used to be, where it's completely unenforceable.
Right. Like you can say people can't do it, but who's to say that they're not just going to write it on their sheet anyway?
Exactly, yeah. Spags was actually one of the people who kind of pioneered the 2-for-1. He had this whole speech at Worlds, what was it, 2016, that he called. He had this whole speech
Spags would
that
have a speech.
he and Aaron Andrews, man, they prepared this whole speech where it was like you sit down with your opponent and you introduce yourself, but you then go out to say, "So, are you a good person?" Like if we were in a lifeboat and only and you had to toss me or off of the lifeboat, I'm paraphrasing here. If you had to toss me off of the lifeboat to guarantee that one of us would get a chance to live, would you do it? And if the opponent is a good person, it's understood what you're asking for. So there was this great moment on day two of that tournament, just real quick, where he's sitting down to play the German national champion, Jackmaid, and he sits down. This guy's from Germany. He's never met Scott in his life, and Scott just sits down. And he's like, "Hey, I'm Scott. Are you a good person?" And he this guy Jackmaid sits there for a second. He thinks, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm a good person."
Thinks about it long and hard.
Yeah, he thought about it. There's a pause, if memory serves.
That's awesome. But yeah, anyway, so Kevin and I decided just to play it out normal type. We didn't want to do any shenanigans. It's one of the it's the first of many store champs for us, so like we'll just play it out.
Yeah.
So he was also on controlling the message. And I've played against this controlling message many times. He's on the more traditional list that's got an architect
Okay.
instead of the team sponsorships,
Okay.
which I forgot. And he puts this architect on archives, and I'm Omar. And so eventually, inevitably, I'm gonna just like run and face check it because like who
Right.
cares? And I did not have a Century Breaker, so the architect fires, which is
That's pretty rough right there.
it's a big deal because CTM's a tempo deck, right? It's not
Exactly.
about
And
locking
you.
them out. It's about racing them to get to a point where they can't do anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Architect is like losing, like they gain a whole extra turn essentially.
Yeah, it basically does just say take an extra turn on it. And I mean, it lets you see R&D, so you know what's coming, you know what your DBS is looking for. If they trash something, you just get to recur it.
Right.
It's just a, yeah, it's like the worst ice to face check.
And this Architect was a really interesting fire. Like, it very much stands out in my mind. So he's at 5 points. I'm at something like four or some six. I don't know, somewhere. I'm doing okay. But I hit this Architect. I'm thinking, oh no, what's going to happen? So, first sub of Architect, you look at the top five cards of your deck. You choose one of them and you can install it. And it's not like hidden information which one he picks. And so I see him pick the third card. And then install it into his remote.
Right, and that's going to suggest that that's like an asset or an upgrade or something you don't really care about
Right, it
necessarily.
could be an agenda, but I'm on an Omar run, right? On archives, which means that I could choose after this architect fires if I'm going to hit R&D or HQ. And I was going to check the top card of R&D, but if the top card of R&D was an agenda, he would have taken the top card of R&D and jammed into his remote. So
Right.
now I know it's not an agenda. But he's at 5 points, and that card he'd installed could be a Beal. And so I have to check it now. So
Sure.
anyway, I complete my Omar run. I run HQ. I see whatever. It doesn't matter. And so I have like one or two clicks left. So I run his remote, which is the traditional Data Raven toll booth.
Of course.
So I take a tag going on in, and the card that he installed was a quantum predictive model.
Awesome.
I'm tagged, so he gets it. He goes up to 6 points. And that's like my last click for the turn, or maybe I clear
Right.
the
Yeah,
Data
you
Raven
can't clear the
tags.
tag.
So then his turn starts. He top decks a card, takes it, like stares me in the eye, takes it, puts in his remote, advance, advance, score. It was a 15 minutes.
Oh my God, the
So the
ultimate
top card of
ruse.
his deck was an agenda, but he knew that if he didn't pull that card, I wouldn't access it. So he like triple played me on this
Right,
turn. It
yeah,
was.
dude, I love CTM. It's like one of my favorite matchups in the whole game right now.
I know that people don't necessarily like asset spam because sometimes you feel like, you're the only way to fight is to trash everything, and I will
Right,
argue
right.
sometimes that's the case, but with CTM it's really not. It's all about.
Yeah, it's CTM isn't even really an asset spam deck. Like I'm looking at your list here. You only play 12 assets. That's about the same amount that you would play ice. It's exactly the same number of operations you play. It's not really an asset spam deck. It never really has been.
No. It's just all about, presenting these threats. And you don't know what it is. Is that advanced card the GFI that is
Right.
going to give you 3 points? Or is that just a quantum predictive model that's behind a Data Raven?
Yeah, CTM just drags you through the world's worst remote like every single turn because if you don't, then bad things happen
Right,
and they just
right.
win the game eventually. And if you do, then they just win the game eventually.
Yeah. So anyway, this was, if I was going to lose this game, this is exactly how I want to do it.
Right. Yeah. You want to get outplayed like that. That's a loss you don't even really feel mad about.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But now there's four of us who are all at a 5-3 record. And we're doing all this, like, tournament management by hand, right? So...
Yeah, it's like in A Beautiful Mind when he's, like, writing on the window. That's what's happening with Dane right now.
Yeah. Dane's, like, writing on the employees. They're like, what are you... What?
Yeah.
get out of here, man. Why are you doing this? So I think we determined that one guy out of the four, 5-3, or 5-3 people doesn't have the strength of schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kevin and... Brandon? No, Kevin and someone else are tied for strength of schedule. Because right. We're also not doing extended seed. Strength of schedule. Because
yeah, the first three are decided. So. It's Jerry in first, myself in second, Brandon in third.
Yes, that's right. So then we're just vying for this one fourth place spot. And so instead of doing extended strength of schedule, Kevin and this other guy start playing like a tiebreaker game. To determine who's going to make it.
Right, because their strength of schedule was ostensibly tied. So right. It was basically like just play instead of, you know, really like figuring anything else out. Like we could go deeper down the rabbit hole, but we don't want to. Just play the tiebreaker game. That'll solve it.
Right. But I'm only like a fraction of a point behind them. And so here's what makes this interesting. My strength of schedule hasn't yet been determined because my first round opponent, Jason, the tournament organizer, is down at the very other end, like the bottom table.
I think he is on last table again, Saif.
Yes, that's exactly who he's playing. And so Saif and Jason are playing, and Dane figures out that I need like 4 points, I think, from that match. Or I need Jason to have 4 points from that match in order to up my strength of schedule to get it.
Yeah, so you basically need Jason to get at least a win and a tie. So he right. can't even split with Saif. He has to get either a sweep or two wins or a tie.
And there's like 5 or 10 minutes left in the round.
Yeah.
And they're only on their first game. It had like dragged out. So
ostensibly you're going to get, if you're going to get anything, it's a win and a tie, which would get you exactly 4 points and the strength of schedule you need to make cut.
Right. And I think Jason is running and Saif is on, maybe like a Gagarin type.
Yeah. He's a Wayland guy. He might've been on Titan maybe. He's
sure.
Playing at Worlds.
Yeah. It might've been Titan too, but, you know, at this point in the game, Saif is like iced up very thoroughly and Jason can't afford to get in that many places. And so then he, you know, he's got all of his virus counters like bleeding all over the table. And so he, is like, all right, you know what? They called time. I'm just going to run R&D. I don't think it's in your hand. He's at 6 points and he's like, I got to find one more agenda. Like, let's go. So he runs R&D. He breaks through all the ice. I'm sitting there because I know that if he is able to win, I'm going to make the cut and steal it, I guess, from Kevin. But sorry, Kevin. He hits the top card of R&D. It's hostile takeover. He wins. I shout, which I feel terrible. Because no one likes like losing a game and then having like other people cheer that you lost.
Right.
So that was very rude of me. Saif, if you ever listen to this, I'm very sorry for that.
Saif's a good guy. I think he would take it in stride. He's a class act.
So miraculously, I get just enough strength of schedule from this bottom table game that now I've made the cut, which is the first cut that I've ever made in a tournament. So. I was like on cloud nine. Like that is a good enough victory for me. I feel great.
Yeah.
And so then these cut games commence and I ended up playing Jerry's CTM, which has not lost yet on the day.
And in a game that mattered. I'll put an asterisk by that.
In a game that did matter. But I'm kind of hazy on this one because I played so much CTM that day.
Yeah.
But I was just trying to do like the thing with Omar that I had done like the rest of the day, which was just run like a mad bandit and get every single central access that I could. And then don't set up really until they've iced up all their centrals. And, in this case, I ended up stealing enough points to win. And I was surprised by that. Who did you play first round?
I played Brandon, who we haven't talked about. Brandon was playing Val and Builder of Nations on the day. So third seed with Wayland Builder of Nations, which is the 40-12 after an encounter with a piece of advanced ice ends, you do a meat damage.
It's pretty good getting to the cut with that idea.
Yeah, it is, especially because he's playing a government takeover in his deck. So he's on the version where he's got a lot of advanceable ice and he plays Red Planet Couriers, which is the triple event that moves all the advancements on all your cards to one card. So the goal is to get a bunch of advancements on your ice, which hurt the runner to even touch. And then once you've got that, you can jam the government takeover in your remote and play Red Planet Couriers and score government takeover, which if it doesn't win you the game immediately from the 6 points that it gives you, you can start clicking for 3 credits every turn.
Right, which is bonkers. But...
So what happens is in our testing house before Worlds, Aaron Andrews had played a bit with a Scorpios deck that was doing kind of the same thing. And I kind of knew the line was to just get as many accesses as I could because the agenda density with the takeover in the deck is going to be so low that it becomes harder than it otherwise would be to find agendas. So I set up, and eventually I get him in a position where he's just got an ice wall on R&D. And I just start deep data mining him through it with Maw on the board. Maw was a really key card on the day, just for separating up combos. But it was really important in this game, because I'm pretty sure it Mawed like a punitive counterstrike out of his hand, and a couple other cards that were meaningful. But I think the first or second DDM found me the government takeover, and from that point. Once you score the takeover against one of these decks, it didn't win because I didn't. It was the only agenda I had scored. But if you score the takeover against a takeover deck as the first agenda, it's basically over because now they have to score to 7 the hard way.
Right.
And a lot of their cards just don't do anything. So.
Right. I mean, like Red Planet Couriers, you'll lose all of your advancement counters only
to score
one of your 5/3s.
A giant Atlas. Yeah, he's on Takeover, Atlas, and Hostile Takeover.
Okay.
And so once I steal the Takeover, he didn't look deflated, but it kind of looked like the other shoe was dropping for him.
Sure.
I found a Hostile Takeover a little bit later. It's a pretty quick game, all said and done. But he told me after the game, he's like, "You're the first person to steal that takeover on the day."
Wow.
Which is that's pretty impressive. 4 rounds without ever getting your government takeover stolen. Like, that's it makes sense why he wasn't too bummed out about it, because that's the risk you take when you play government takeover.
Oh, absolutely. You live by the takeover, you die by the takeover.
Exactly. You got to know that that's coming at some point. So, pretty quick game, all said and done.
Yeah. So, both of us win our first round cut games. So then Jerry plays Brandon in the loser's bracket. And then Andrew, you and I meet up again in the winner's bracket.
We do. And this was my favorite game on the day for sure.
Mine as well. This was really awesome.
This was a tough one for sure.
So I learned my lessons and I pre-rezzed all my assets knowing that you have 3 Hacktivist, which is a little bit ironic. Because you never played a Hacktivist the whole game.
Not only did I not play a Hacktivist, 2 of them were trapped on a Street Peddler. The first Peddler that I play in the game was... Hang on, let me look at my list just so I can remember exactly what it was. It was Hacktivist, I think Inject as the third card.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... Like, I almost flipped the table when that happened. Because Hacktivist is your out card in Max CTM. I wouldn't say it solves the matchup... but it makes it a lot easier for yourself.
Oh, my gosh.
So now I'm in hard mode, basically, is the way I'm thinking about it. It's like, I got to play real Netrunner against CTM.
Right. And I don't think you have anything else that necessarily helps you trash stuff. Do you?
I have actually nothing that will help me trash that. Those are stuck for the rest of the game. Yeah, I don't play, anything that will trash that.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to remember where things go. I do know that I ended up putting an Archangel on HQ and a Gutenberg and something else on.
Yeah, the Archangel bounced my first Maw, which was a really annoying thing to have happen. Your remote, I believe, was Resistor and then Gutenberg on the outside, or IP block maybe.
Yeah,
my IP. It was a barrier, and then on the outside was the Gutenberg.
Yeah.
So I'm dealing with a lot of ice that my heat breakers have a hard time breaking, and I think I only get a Beal real early on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting at 2 points, and meanwhile, you're scoring out to, I think, 4. You get a QPM and a Ares scored, and then you score a Beal.
Yeah. And once I get that Ares scored, like, you had been able to contain some of my board
I'll definitely trash stuff before you get the Ares score, but that card hits, and I'm probably never touching anything else ever again.
I had a sponsorship on the board, too. So, like, you scoring did. Ares with a sponsorship and then putting back, like, a DBS or Bankers or something.
Right. It's just too much. Strength. Like, I just give up on the remotes at that point. The big turning point in the game was I have a Citadel Sanctuary installed, which is really pretty nice against CTF. Eventually, I get broke enough to the point where you can land a hard-hitting news to the point where I cannot clear all four tags. And I let you trace me for the third one on the Citadel Sanctuary, and I have to keep the tag.
Right. I think you only had like three or four credits, right?
So exactly. At the end of the turn, I think I had three credits. I think I clicked for Liberate and then cleared three tags, and it left me with like three credits.
Yeah. So now he's tagged on my turn, and I know that deep data mining is your multi-access, and every time I lose a CTM, it's always out of my central. So like that's going to be basically your win condition. And you have a Citadel, a data folding, which is giving you a fair amount of money, and then two same old thing on the table.
Right.
And I go back and forth about what to trash, but I look at my hand and I have my singleton best defense. Which is going to let me trash that same old thing, even if he's not tagged. So I pay to trash the Citadel, the data folding, and one of the same old things. And then next turn he clears the tag, but then I best defense his same old thing.
Right.
So, and you had already levied, I think, at this point,
too. I had levied once, and I think I had the other levy in hand.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So what happens from that point is I money up a little bit, and eventually you go install advance. The big thing that I did, and I think the lesson that you could certainly take from this, is I asked how much time was left in the round, because I'm down on points, and he's about to score something. Now, install advance and CTM does not inherently mean that he's scoring a global food. Obviously, that's bad, because if you score that, you win.
Right.
But it could also be quantum predictive model.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out, do I just, like, damn the torpedoes and go for it, or... do I play the second levy and maybe hope to get a little bit more out of this game? And there's about 5 minutes left in the round, so I'm like, I don't have time for a second levy. Let's just go for it. And so the play I chose to make was click one retrieval run, which on an open archive. So I get into open archives, I install the Ottman from my heap, and I put it at Ottman 6.
Nice.
Because there's both a Archangel and a Gutenberg on R&D, which is strength 6.
And so they're hellish to get through, but they're only one sub.
Yeah, I can't let the trace fire on the Gutenberg, because I'm holding the third same old thing, and I have the money to play same old deep data mining. But if the trace fires, and I take the tag, now quantum predictive model's live, and there's like 2 points to make. There's 1 to 2 points in the deck that I can't steal, and actively put me farther behind and make the board position worse. Because if that's a Beal or something, and I give him the fifth point, then he can just score that and win. So I got to break the Gutenberg. So I get the Ottman 6. I play the third same old thing from my hand, and I go same old deep data mining. And I score 5 points off of that and win.
Yeah, which is crazy. Crazy deep data mining. But
it was QPM, Beal, and a food to win off 5 cards.
I remember, like, thinking, oh man, this Atman's really cool, and then you slap down a same old thing, and I was like, I thought I got rid of those.
Yeah. I don't pop off in Netrunner very often, but that one got a reaction out of me, because I was pretty stoked. There was definitely a point where I'm like, I'm out of this game, I was able to just pull myself out of the swamp and win it.
I don't consider myself like a great Netrunner player, but this was an example of me playing some really good Netrunner, because I wasn't just thinking about my side of the table. Like, I was thinking about, what are his outs? Oh, he can, you know, hit me with his deep data mining, and even if he's tagged during that run, there's still a good chance that he can win off that, right? So me consciously trying to remove those same old things when maybe I wouldn't have done that if I was kind of playing with blinders on, I felt like was... It was some really good interplay there. Same thing with, like, pre-resing the stuff because I knew you were on Hacktivist and all that kind of thing. So
yeah, the other option I had was go same old legwork instead, which is a little bit cheaper because I only have to deal with the Archangel. But you had a hot DBS, so I figured you would have been fixing your hand and not keeping agendas in it. Like, there's no reason to keep agendas at that point.
Right.
So I figured HQ was pretty dry. It usually is once the DBS is firing for a few turns.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why DBS is such a threat, because it basically turns off like one of the central servers. It
yeah,
means
the
that
other
you can't
thing I
run
didn't
HQ.
do in that game, and this is just because I didn't know your list, you would put you had an upgrade in that remote server, and I just figured it's from that virtual tour. And
Right.
I'm like, I
Everyone
can't,
does.
I'm not going to run it and trash that. But the joke was on me. You don't play Mumbat Virtual Tour in your deck.
No.
That's probably calibration testing. It's the only thing it could be.
Right. Slots are tight. So,
I mean, they are. I don't dispute that.
and yeah, but I also find that like people learn how to play against Mumbed Virtual Tour. So like I haven't trashed a Mumbed Virtual. I didn't trash a Mumbed Virtual Tour like the entire day
Yeah, I don't
because
think I don't think I hit one either.
you just like plan out your turn so that you don't have the 5 credits that you need to do the force trash,
Yeah.
and then you get around it, right?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, you're open up to hard-hitting noobs at that point, but like if you're running with that few credits, you might have been opened up to it anyway.
Right. Or sometimes you can like slam down a liberated, right? And then like check something. Oh, I only have 2 credits because I just installed this liberated.
Yeah, you can just bank your credits elsewhere. Yeah, I think
And then you
going back
take
to the
that
game
gain
you
off
played
that.
against Jerry, I think he did exactly that. He made a run and then installed a liberated account and didn't take any money off of it. Actually, this might have been
Yeah.
the next game. Anyway, I think it was the next game actually, because I think you go back and you rematch with Jerry.
Yeah, exactly. So I lose our game, Andrew, which means that you are now like top seed winner's
Yeah,
bracket. You're the only one there, so.
I'm in grand finals on winner's side, which is a huge deal because that means two things. Number one, I get to sit out a round,
Right.
and kind of just recollect myself. But the biggest thing is that I only have to win one game against the person in grand finals, whereas they have to win both sides. They have to sweep me. I only have to win one game.
Yep. So huge advantage on 2 accounts. And that definitely came into play because
Absolutely.
well, I'll get to it when we get there. But
Yeah.
so Jerry and I play at the losers bracket. It's basically the semifinals, and whoever wins plays Andrew for all the marbles. And he was playing Val, which this is like the 6th time I've played relatively generic Anarch on the day. So like this game, I don't remember super well. But I do remember that eventually I did get up the calibration testing sponsorship engine running, and then he couldn't compete much with it. Also early on, he ran, and maybe this is what you're talking about. He
Yeah,
ran
I
and
think this is
then
what I'm talking about.
he installs he like ran to check some remote, and maybe it's like team sponsorship or something, who cares? And he installs a liberated and then doesn't take much money off of
It
it, like.
leaves 16 credits on it.
So like that's a terrible move against any kind of yellow because A, you ran, which means that they can tank you, and B, you just spent a bunch of money that you're not gonna have to fight a trace. So instead of hitting with like a hard hitting news, which maybe he was thinking like even if he plays a hard hitting news, like I'll still have time to clear the liberated, I just
Right.
land a really cheap C source on first click and then
Yeah.
trash like his daily casts and his fully loaded liberated. So now
Yeah,
he's just like
you got
poured
like
out.
20 credits off the board off of just the C source. And
Yeah.
that was the whole game right there, 'cause he was just broke for the entire he couldn't do anything basically for the entire rest of the game.
Right. I think he played an indexing at some point, but either he whiffed or it just wasn't enough.
Right.
Yeah, I ended up beating Jerry, who had been undefeated on the day.
Yeah,
So I was
his
like,
only
damn.
losses were in the cut. And the bummer of that is, I mean, those are the losses that really matter at the end of the
Right.
day.
Unlike me, where I lost multiple times during the day and had to have someone else
Yeah,
win
but
in
you are
order
in
to get me
grand
into the cut.
finals.
But that's how it goes, right? So,
Exactly.
yeah, now finals. Andrew and Graham facing
Yeah.
off for the 3rd time.
And I have not played my Corp deck in the cut at all, so I have to play Making News.
Right. So this one, I'm going to go through turn by turn.
Yeah, we can this one I can pretty safely we can go turn by turn. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you take first turn.
So I mulligan my opening hand, and my opening hand, let's see if I can get it right. It is hard hitting news, boom, and Aryabhata Tech and some other card. I think it was preemptive action. That's my mulligan, so I'm stuck on that. And I'm like, this is an okay hand. Like, it's got, I don't know, it's got hard hitting news. It's got the boom. I don't really want that in my opening hand. I kind of prefer it in my deck, so I can go fetch it out with the consulting visit. It's got no ice that really is It's got no ice at all, so that's a bummer, but I guess we just hope to draw some. So I tick my mandatory draw, it's Macrophage, and I'm like, okay, now we're cooking with something.
Now we're cooking.
So I go install credit credit. Macrophage on HQ, credit credit.
Right.
Pass
back
turn.
To me. I thought, this is a yellow deck, which is like the fifth or sixth time that I've played against the yellow deck today. And I've beaten all the yellow decks by ravaging their centrals using regular runs and Omar runs. So I like ran R&D, but then I checked the top card and it's a whatever. And then I'm thinking, well, my only money card that I mulliganed for is this Liberated. So I really need to get that going. So I click for a credit to go up to six, install the Liberated, take four off of the Liberated, thinking that this is the time when he is least likely to have hard-hitting news. But the thing is, he has Consulting Visit in his Making News deck, three of them. So, like, even if he didn't have hard-hitting news in his hand, this isn't CTM. He's got a bunch of influence. He's got Consulting Visits.
I got five of them in my deck, basically. Right. Three Consulting, two hard-hitting.
So this was a terrible move for me to run. The only way I could have run is if I had more burst money. Like if you have
like Sure Gamble in your hand, then it's running fine.
Sure Gamble, Dirty Laundry would have been fine, but I didn't. So I kind of screwed up. Back to your turn.
Right. So you're sitting there with 12 on your Liberated account, four credits in your pool. So I mandatory draw into something, and I'm looking at the board, and I'm like, okay, all right, I get a freebie hard hitting news, and I got the boom in hand. I think I have this, but there is an out that he can take on the next turn. So I go credit, credit, hard hitting. I use one of my ID credits to just trace them out. So yep. Four text. Easy enough. I'm sitting there. I think at this point I had six credits, go to eight. I'm at five credits.
Yeah. So again, this is the part where me having played against CTM constantly all day long made me screw up, and not having a break between games, because I never took a moment to like breathe and figure out what Andrew was doing. All I could think about was, what have I been doing to win? I've been doing this to win, so I'll just follow the same formula, which is a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. So I could have taken four credits off the Liberated, which would bring me up to eight, mm-hmm. and then clear three tags. And
right.
That would have been optimal, because I should know that he's on boom, and even if he doesn't have boom in his hand, he's got three Consulting Visits.
Right.
Instead,
I think instead of five, I think I was on six credits, so I had enough to Consulting Visit boom.
That's true. That's true. But I didn't even think that far ahead, because I forgot, again, that you had these Consulting Visits, because I'm an airhead. Also, I was fatigued. I'll blame it on fatigue.
That's a fair thing. No
there
lunch break.
There you go.
No nothing.
So anyway, I clear off the Liberated and clear a tag, thinking that I'm gonna, you know, maybe he'll close the counts me, but like, what's the big deal? Because again,
right.
CTM doesn't pack like kill cards.
They right.
have the influence for it. So I remember the exact interchange was, all right, I'll clear a Liberated and clear a tag. And you're like, you're gonna go down to three tags? And I said, yeah. You're like, but three tags?
It's like, yeah, I had to like double check. I'm like, you have three tags, right? And you're like, yes, you acknowledge that, yes, indeed, I have three tags. And I'm like, okay. So I mandatory draw and play a boom and went on turn three.
Right. Boom. Done. Game over.
Yeah.
Store
champion. Yeah, I said immediately after that, I'm like, that was the most underwhelming grand finals I think I've ever played in my life.
Oh my gosh. It was ridiculous. I had two turns and then I lost.
Right. Yeah.
I lost based on my mistakes.
It wasn't like, I think you'd rather lose quick like that than lose in a real heartbreaker that you have to like hang on to for a little while.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
But yeah, the move where you take four and then clear three tags, it's not a game winning play, but it will stop you from losing is what that does basically.
Right. Exactly.
I just had to hope that you either A, didn't see it, or just B, didn't think I had it.
Right.
I played Magic previously, like I said, and one of my philosophies was, I'm going to make you show it to me.
Yes.
I don't really like to play around like cards that I don't know are in the deck. Like if I'm in a position where like you just have to show it to me, like I'm going to say it. Like you got to show it to me.
Yeah. And you know, even if I had made that first turn mistake, but then second turn I did clear down to one tag. You know, you probably would have trashed the Liberated and just keep getting set up. And so now
exactly.
I have two tags, two credit, or one tag, two credits, and nothing else.
Exactly.
And so it's going to be a grind.
You're still in a tight spot at that point. Cause yeah. I mean, I can just, once you're on low credits, the mini game you play with Making News is how quick can I get the runner to zero?
Right.
And if they do it themselves, then even better.
Right,
But yeah,
exactly. That's
so
what you're talking about.
you get second. I take first. It's actually my first store championship win.
Yeah, you said you'd gotten second a couple times, yeah?
I had gotten second a lot. Wisconsin's a tough region, man. We got a lot of killers in the area. Spags, Aaron Andrews, Joe Shupp, a couple of guys. Like, a lot of the Milwaukee guys are really tough. So being able to take one feels pretty good. I had been planning on going to a lot of store champs this season. My goal was to win one, but I didn't think I'd do it at the first one I go to.
Sure. Sure.
So that felt pretty good, because now for all the other ones I go to, I don't have to try as hard.
Yeah, right. And that's just it. Like, you know, this was I was hoping to get like top eight, right? Like, I was like, give me a deck box. That's what I want. And so to come out second place, far exceeding expectations, and I was like, oh man, I can just take the rest of the season off. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then the next weekend I went to my local store champ and I was like, I'm going to go back to my favorites. I'm going to do Titan Fast Advance and Adam. And
nice.
They both did very average. I think I got like 12th out of 21 people, right?
Okay.
So I'm like, yeah. Anything you would change about your decks on the day?
The max deck, I've already made some changes. After the Street Peddler fiasco, I have swapped the Street Peddlers over for I've Had Worses, and already in testing, it's been a lot better. It gives you more game against damage decks. We have a few people who play Jinteki around Madison, particularly like really annoying, grindy damage Jinteki decks with Kakugos and DNA Track. So, you're already pretty good against those decks because you have Levy. You have two Levy, so you effectively get three trips through the deck.
Right.
But anything helps, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The max deck is pretty rock solid. I think Zach Kavis is talking about possibly cutting the Citadel Sanctuary for a Yarnu Mercs. I don't know about that quite yet. I haven't had any issues with meat damage, and Citadel kind of pulls double duty against meat damage
and tags,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like the Citadel, but I could be persuaded to not play it.
I got to ask you, what's up with the second levy? Are you playing that very often, or what's up?
Not often, but it's a really nice insurance valve in matches that go long.
Sure.
It was probably more valuable when we were more of a control deck with Tapworms and no multi-access. Now we have a little bit more blitz potential with the deep data mining and the legwork.
Yeah, you can close games out before you need to do that second
levy. Exactly, but there are definitely times where you want the second levy, particularly in like Prisity matchups, so I'm thinking of like Potential Unleashed. Potential Unleashed is a bad matchup on the face of it already because they play Arc Lockdown. So most of the time they're going to get a levy from you. So having the second one means that you still get a levy in your deck.
Right.
Really the worst matchup you're gonna hit out of this max deck is Scorpios, and there's not a whole lot you can do about that. You don't play Rebirth to get out of it. You don't play Employee Strike to turn off the ability. You just kind of got to pray a little bit. You got to install your Breakers as soon as you see them and just pray.
Right. Although I will say that with the second levy, if you know you lose a levy to, I don't know, like a snare or something in a Scorp matchup, you've still got another one. So again, it's that insurance policy, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's just insurance. And there's not a whole lot else you want to do with the three influence. I mean, you could play like info sifting, but that I think the second levy is better than the info sifting. The only other change I've toyed with is cutting the retrieval run for an Ice Carver. That's a change that Dave Kuhlman suggested, the original designer of the list. Retrieval Run was more valuable when you were playing Data Sucker, because you had Retrieval Run is basically just your second Ottman, but that's exactly the reason I like it. The games where you want Ottman, you really want Ottman, like in Brain Rewiring, if you start seeing a lot of ice with the same strength pop up, Ottman becomes just like the best investment you can ever get.
Absolutely.
And if you cut the retrieval run, you have to get Ottman the hard way, and you can't have Ottman and the Ice Carver installed at the same time, because it throws off all the math on Ottman and your install order. So I'm nowhere near sold on that yet, but I think it does warrant a little bit of testing.
Sure.
And I'm not going to add a 46th card.
No, you don't need it. I mean, sometimes people do with Max.
I'd rather go to 47 out of Max. Just mathematically, it makes more sense. But I frankly hate sleeving extra cards that I don't need to. I'm a big proponent that number in the corner for runners is the number you play.
Gotcha.
On Corpse side, there's definitely a little bit more flexibility, I think, with some of the slots. The big change that I would love to make if I can, I would love to play Economic Warfare in this Making News deck. Economic Warfare would be absolutely brutal. Economic Warfare is a zero-cost Wayland operation, two influence. You play only if the runner, I think, made a successful run. and that it just they lose 4 credits if able.
It's a negative sure gamble.
Basically, yeah, it's a negative sure gamble. But it's really great with hard hitting news because it just gets their if the runner has say 9 credits in their pool and they think they're safe, they're not safe anymore.
Right. I love it too because so often when you're going to play hard hitting news, you're like, all right, well, click to draw. Now I have the second click. I have nothing to do with it, so I guess I'll take a credit and then I'll hard hitting news.
Exactly.
So why not be spending that playing this awesome card that ensures that your hard hitting news is like twice as devastating?
Correct. Yeah. So I think it's a really, really strong card in the deck. The problem is influence because you have to play the Wayland Alliance to get consulting visit. The card is just so crucial. Right. To the way the deck functions, that you can't really cut it.
I'm looking at your list here. How would you feel about dropping a global food for something?
That's the change you would need to make. Is you need to start dropping like global food. You'd probably have to drop global food, Beanstalk, Caduceus to get 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's 4 influence. So that would get you 2 of them. You would have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, you would still have the Wayland Alliance. You would just have to play another real 5/3, which. It's not the worst because you could probably play like SSL endorsement or one of the new 5/3s.
Yeah, you've already got a Utopia fragment in here.
Yeah, which and is you garbage. Could play SSL endorsement instead of that as well. I don't think that's a bad decision. I've thought about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're talking. You were starting to get into like just card slots because you can't go to 54. That's really the biggest problem I've had with some of the changes.
Yeah, it's amazing how different a 49 card deck feels from a 54 card deck.
Absolutely.
And it is noticeable, and I didn't think it would be because I'm the kind of person who doesn't necessarily care about the consistency. I'm just trying to make plays with what cards I have in hand. But like, you know, usually when you build a deck, you build it around a certain combo,
yeah,
or card, you know, a certain specific loadout. And so, like, if you're digging for this consulting visit, like you're just making it harder for yourself.
Yeah,
going to 54. So.
I almost call it like your deck's thesis statement. Like you need to be able to sum up what your deck does in like a sentence or two.
Sure.
Kind of pose the question that your deck is looking to ask of the opposing player, and they have to be able to answer that question.
I love that.
Especially in a deck like this where your thesis statement is really based around a couple of interactions, the deck really needs to run as much like a machine as it can. It needs to be an engine.
Yeah.
In like a more general good stuff deck or like a lot of Glacier decks, that's less important. The card slots kind of become a bit more homogenized. But in this deck, each card is a more specific function.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say some other changes that I've considered making. I know I was talking to Kaiser JD about it. He suggested swapping the instead of playing Gutenberg, you play Sync BRE instead. I'm not super bullish about that change. Gutenberg is insane in that slot, I think. It's so
Listener,
cheap.
If you're taking away anything from this podcast, it's that Gutenberg is the shit. Like you
Gutenberg
gotta understand
is
this.
A highly underrated card right now because I'm so loath to cut it. It really is a great card. It's got a big trace on it. It's high strength. No one's playing David.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the traces on Sync BRE are lower. It costs 2 more. It's got the same strength, but the only advantage that BRE really has is that second trace where it stops the runner from accessing a card.
Right.
So it's a little bit better if the runner goes tag me, but most of the time if they're going tag me, you've pretty much already won anyway. You have other ways of stopping them. Resistor right. gets good, IP block gets good, they can't break macrophages. So I don't know if it's really necessary.
Yeah, Sync BRE is a weird card because it looks really good on paper because of that strength that's in the corner, but like I feel like it's hard to get those traces to be relevant, or if they are relevant and they don't want to break it like normally with a breaker, then they'll just pay through whatever trace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I don't know. I can see why it'd be good in this because it's got 2 traces on it.
That's exactly what I was about to say. It does have 2 traces on it, which can be relevant sometimes once you've got the Arya tech up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it might be worth trying, but on the face of it, I'm not too bullish on it.
Sure.
The only other change I've considered making is if you start running out of slots and you want to play too many cards, I'm currently on 2 preemptive, 2 special report. I have toyed with the idea of playing Distract the Masses instead. Distract the Masses is the card, it's kind of a neutral Jackson Howard replacement. It gives the runner 2 credits. You then get to trash 2 cards from up to 2 cards from your hand. And shuffle 2 cards from archives back into your deck, and then remove Distract the Masses.
Sure.
So the way I've kind of justified it. I haven't tested it yet, but I think I'm going to. It kind of does both things that preemptive action and special report do, in the sense that it fixes your hand or fixes your archives and solves flood. But it does it in one card rather than two separate cards that take up more room in the deck. Additionally, the big problem with Distract the Masses is that it gives the runner 2 credits, but if you've got Aryabhatatek and Door to Door going, they might not get to keep that money. You might just trace it out of them at the beginning of their turn. So it might not really have a downside once you get going.
That window for when the 2 credits is relevant is probably pretty narrow, right?
It's
Because if they're
extremely
broke,
narrow.
it doesn't matter.
Exactly. They got to do something with it, like start of turn before the Door to Door goes off. And a lot of times there's nothing super valuable to do with that. Like, you'd have to have like Clone Ship or SMC or something like that, but it may not really help.
That'd be worth testing, I think. But do you think you'd go up to 3 of those instead of the 2 preemptive, 2 special report?
Yeah, it's possible, because there are definitely times where you need to fix your hand. And that's why it's tough, where the special report's probably better than the preemptive action. Just because, like, if you get you'll get flooded in this deck sometimes. Sometimes you need to actually like pitch cards that don't do anything to just draw into the cards you do want. So I'll often toss back ice that doesn't matter because they can't get anywhere valuable anyway, just to search for like kill pieces or agendas that I need to score out.
You need to have a way to get boom back if they trash it,
Exactly. You
though.
got to have a way to get boom back, or if it does get trashed, which thankfully hasn't really been much of an issue so far. But you also want a way to get consulting visits back in the deck, because that's really the glue that holds everything together, is the consulting visits.
I think Making News is interesting, but Consulting Visit is really what's making your deck work. And
It's
then
yeah.
once
It's
Consulting
really a
Visit rotates, this deck will absolutely have to change.
Yeah, it's a Wayland deck for the most part. You don't have to play all the Wayland cards in
You're
it.
making your one current really good, is what you're
Yeah,
doing.
exactly. It's a Wayland. It is Wayland in terms of like style, but your ID is just better than any of the Wayland IDs could ever be for this style of deck.
Absolutely. I'm looking at my decks here, trying to figure out if I would change anything. It's hard to tell with the Omar deck because I was running so much that I didn't even see like a third of these cards. So, I think it's important to have something for an asset spam matchup. I was also kind of nervous about maybe Gagarin showing up, and so I think keeping the Scrubbers is really important.
Yeah, I don't think Scrubber is a bad card for sure. I mean, Scrubber is nice because if you install it at a time where you know you're going to use it that same turn, it pays for itself immediately. Installs for 2, gets the 2 credits, boom, you got it. Like, it pays for itself.
A secret thing that I really liked was the inclusion of Symmetrical Visage. I know when
Yeah,
that card
the old
came out, it
baby.
was really popular. But like it just helps keep your credits a little bit more even, right? You're just kind of saving an extra, click for a credit each turn. So that feels pretty good.
Have you considered cutting your console?
So I have 2 copies of Turntable in here, and the biggest reason for that is I bought a person's like used collection, and it had the 2015 World Champ
Oh, and
Max
the
deck in it.
Alt-Arts, and those were a one of,
And
yeah.
so they're both like Turntable is a full bleed in those decks, but it's only a one of. So I
And
had 2 Turntables, and I was like,
it's a sweet full art too.
it's a
Like,
sweet
I
full
don't
art.
really like those Alt-Arts, the World Champ Alt-Arts. I usually don't play them, but that one is sweet, admittedly.
That was pretty sweet. So, there's some matchups where it would be relevant, but like I never installed Turntable on the day. Like it just,
Yeah, I've been finding that most Anarch decks where you're not playing Maw, or like a what I would call like a build around console, where the console is part of that thesis statement, you can typically get away with cutting your console in Anarch. Most of them are not meaningful enough to really be necessary. Maw and Obelisk are really probably the two best, and those are the two that you're going to build the identity of your deck around, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Maw, there are some people out in the meta who don't like Maw.
Yeah,
They
hashtag Maw is
say
bad is
it's a
the.
bad card. What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't think Maw is a bad card. I don't think it's the best card in the world, but it's definitely a. I think it in a lot of in some decks it is a fine card, and one that will that can win you games. There are absolutely times where Maw doesn't do anything, and I will fully concede that. If you're not really breaking up combos with it, it's not super meaningful against some variants of CI where you would think it'd be really good. So like Brain Rewiring doesn't really install a lot of cards. You don't get a ton of accesses, so you're probably not going to get a ton of really good Maw triggers. What Maw is good at doing is disrupting combos in a quote-unquote fair corporation. It's also really good in conjunction with Hacktivist Meeting. The way Hacktivist Meeting works is Hacktivist Meeting adds an additional cost to res cards.
Right,
So if
so
they
if you
have no
maul all their stuff out of their hand,
they
they
can't
can't
res
res it.
anything. Exactly. So what Maw does is it applies pressure in a way that can be really, really impactful against certain corporations who want to hold on to cards in hand until the opportune moment. It kind of forces corps to play more by the seat of their pants, which not all corps are prepared to do. CTM is a hard time dealing with this because CTM wants to hold on to things like their tag punishment, like their closed accounts, like their exchange of information, like their hard-hitting news, their C sources. All of these cards, they're not always relevant, but they don't want to get rid of them. They need to hold on to them. Maw prevents them from doing that.
Yeah, I think in particular, like Eddie Kim with Maw has a really favorable controlling the message matchup compared to most runners, at least, where
Yeah.
Maw's disrupting them. You have a link, so their ID gets worse and most of their cards get worse. And you can trash operations out of their hand.
Right.
So that's like a threefold counter to CTM strategy.
And even in Max, I mean, between Hacktivist, Maw, and Citadel Sanctuary, like CTM was the matchup that I wanted most of the day. It was the matchup that I think the deck was really tuned to beat, and it performed. It didn't drop a game.
I was gonna say, I think your Max was undefeated, right?
It was, yeah. Max was undefeated. Now, granted, again, I had an ID and a buy-in there, but it was still undefeated.
So, one other thing about my Omar deck is that the influence can be pretty flex. I think the career fairs you stay. I had two Amakua, but at how much I was running, I probably could have a third and it would create a lot of early game pressure.
Right.
Also, I have two employee strike, but I don't see a problem with going up to three employee strike.
Yeah, I think the question you want to ask yourself if you're on employee strike is, would I be able to play Film Critic and have a better deck? They kind of accomplish the same task a lot of the times, but
They
they're for
do.
diff they're definitely good against different decks. So employee strike is going to be better against something like, say, CTM
I feel
or
like Film
CI.
Critic is particularly good for Jinteki because of the strength of
Jinteki or
Obakata.
certain flavors of Wayland as well if they're playing like punitive Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
So that's a meta read, but it's one where, if you're going to play this deck again, it might be a question worth asking yourself.
Absolutely.
I have to say I love the On the Lam.
That was the thing too, is that I took out one Amakua and one Employee Strike, and I put in an On the Lam. Basically, it's doing the same thing that your Citadel Sanctuary is doing, right?
Yeah.
It's anti hard-hitting news because it can prevent up to three tags. So they basically have to burn through a hard-hitting news just to get rid of On the Lam.
Right.
And then it also protects you against, I was afraid of like a brain rewiring thing, right? Because it can prevent up to three damage of any type.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, that's a card that Brain Rewiring cannot deal with.
Right.
Because it just stops the combo pretty cold for the most part.
Pretty cold. Again, it's one of those one-shot things where, if they are on that 24/7 tech, then they can burn through your On the Lam and then
Yeah.
hit you again. But like, at that point, you need to have already won. So like,
Yeah.
let's be real.
The other cool play, I don't know if you've done this or seen this before, but there's not a lot of the resource hate cards that are out there are specifically they're very picky about non-virtual, and I'm noticing you play two Turning Wheel. So what's really cool is if you slap the On the Lam on the Turning Wheel, there's certain cards where they can't touch that ever. They have to get a tag on you or force you to burn the On the Lam. So I'm
Right.
thinking of a card like Wake Up Call.
Yeah.
Wake Up Call was at the tournament. I think Will Brown was on it out of his Blue Sun. I know that there was someone playing Palana with Wake Up Call, and that card cannot target the Turning Wheel because it's a virtual resource. So that's just a cool little bonus. You could also put it on DDoS, but I don't think that's a good idea.
Nah. You could put it on Bagat, it'd be fine, or Symmetrical Visage, but I agree that Turning Wheel is the best target for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I loved having the two DDoS. That makes up for the fact that you are kind of spending more of your clicks running than you are setting up, so it
Yeah.
acts as like an extra breaker, and you can often like I got it on a street peddler a couple of times. So then you pop the street peddler, install DDoS, no clicks yet. So then you run HQ three times, you get three turning wheel counters, and then you make a big R&D run.
Right.
So that play I pull off a couple times, and it's really good.
Yeah, your deck definitely plays Street Peddler a little bit better than mine does.
It just helps that there's more resources, I think. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
the CTM deck, it's at 11 influence. Like, what am I doing? What is that like?
You gotta fill that last influence, my friend.
I thought about putting in a third team sponsorship just because I love that card so much.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the easy. That's definitely the easiest card to play. It's tough. There's not a ton of really awesome one influence cards out there, I would say.
I used to have a Tapestry in this, but I switched over to Gutenberg because Tapestry is insanely taxing against indexing, which everyone was on. But I'm happy with the Gutenberg now. I think I would keep it.
I think the card that I would maybe play is Maryland Campaign.
That's another one I've seen.
Maryland Campaign is absolutely bonkers in a deck that wants to play like the Never Advance game.
Yeah, that's true.
Spags and I were talking about it at Worlds, and he's like, it's the best Never Advance card that's ever been printed, because a lot of Never Advance cards, thinking of cards like Snare or like Edge of World, the downside they would have is if they didn't run it, those cards didn't do anything, and you're effectively at that point playing blank cards in your deck. It requires the runner to take a certain action.
Right.
Brain Rewiring, or excuse me, not Brain Rewiring, Maryland Campaign does nothing like that. Maryland Campaign works if they run it because it acts as a bait. It works if they trash it because it shuffles itself back in, which then replicates the bluff later on. And if they don't run it, it just pays for itself. And you can install over it, shuffle it back in, and just start the cycle anew.
Right, right, exactly.
It was so good that Scott and Aaron were playing three of them instead of the some of the commercial bankers groups and the architect. They were on two bankers, three Maryland, because the card was that good at baiting people into the remote.
I agree with that.
So. The other card you could always consider playing is, I mean, NGO Front, as we were talking about before. NGO Front is pretty bonkers out of NBN.
Yeah.
Especially out of CTM, because once it hits the board, they're probably not going to trash it, but it gives more threats to the install advance play.
Yes.
Because now you have to consider, okay, is this a food? Is this a Beal for 3 points? Is this a QPM that I'm just getting baited into? Or is it the NGO Front?
Right. Right.
If it's NGO Front, you've baited them into a run, and you get paid, and because they ran, you get to hard-hitting them, probably.
Right, which is pretty awesome.
Right.
You know, if I could, I'd probably try to squeeze in another Exchange of Information, because I think that plays really strong.
I kind of like Exchange more than I like closed accounts, for the most part, in CTM.
Yeah.
To the point where, if I'm playing CTM, I probably won't even play closed accounts.
Hmm.
Which, the way I justify it is, closed accounts is not going to win you a game in and of itself. It'll probably get you real close, but it's not a card that you play and it immediately wins you the game. Exchange of Information will have opportunities where you play it and you win the game because of it.
Right.
Just right there on the spot, especially with C-Source. You can set up some pretty excellent plays with C-Source. Now, closed accounts is also really good with C-Source. Like, the best three cards you can probably play is C-Source, Closed Accounts, Hard-Hitting News, one right after the other.
Yeah, that's a devastating. That's a game-winning play.
That is as close to a game-winning play as Closed Accounts is going to get.
Yeah.
I would say.
And then I really like having Best Defense right now.
I like Best Defense, too.
Even if they're not tagged, like, you're still trashing the same old things. You're trashing the Tapeworms and the Satcons and... I don't know. There's a lot of good targets, and there continues to be a lot of good targets. RNG Key just came out.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, same old thing. It's me. I had no idea that Best Defense was coming. That was not even a card that was even on my radar out of your deck.
I really like it in a general corp deck, and then I particularly like it in CTM, because then it just, like, unlike Psychographics, where it doesn't get good until they start floating tags, Best Defense starts out decent and then gets better the more tags they have, right?
Yeah, Psychographics is either blank if they aren't holding tags, or it probably says you win the game by playing this on it.
Right.
Best Defense isn't quite that good when it's really good, like when they're holding tags, but it's never as bad as Psychographics get. It's more of a kind of a middle ground.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. So if anything, I'd probably drop the two closed accounts, put in another exchange, and then maybe like a Maryland or a team sponsorship. Other than that, I mean, CTM is, I'm not going to call it a solved deck, but at the same time, like, it's been played, and it's kind of been determined that this is, if you're going to play this strategy, this is probably a pretty solid build for it.
The core concept is pretty close to figure it out, but I don't think that the deck is in any way solved, because the slots are so flexible. Like, there's a lot of different ways you can build CTM and still have it be effective in its overall game plan.
I had someone ask me about why I have the 15 minutes in here instead of like another Ares or something like that.
Oh, that person's wrong. I'm just
I always put a 2-cost agenda in any deck that I have team sponsorship in, because sometimes you just need to get something back. And so then you just slam down the 2-for-1, score it out, and it says gain a point and install something from your heap. And so
yeah, there's basically four really annoying agendas to steal in your deck. Those being 15 minutes and then three quantum predictive models. There's also nothing better than exchanging the 15 minutes and then immediately shuffling it back in. Like,
That is the best play.
Yeah,
best,
it's just heartbreaking play for the runner.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, man. I think we've pretty well covered these decks. I would absolutely recommend these to someone if they were going to go to a tournament. Any of the four of our decks. You know, I think the making news is a good way to maybe scare off some friends.
Oh yeah, you'll lose friends and alienate people with making news, door-to-door making news. But I mean, if that's your thing, man, then like by all means, like but go for it.
You know what? You're gonna earn those friends back by then playing Atman and deep data mining out of Max.
So, oh yeah, for sure.
You know what? It all evens out, right?
I think so. Yeah, people still play with me at the store, so I think it's all good.
Yeah.
I just apologize as soon as they break out making news if I ever do break it out against anyone.
Right. I'm excited for what the next making news deck is, because I like the ID. I like that it enables like Tracer Ice and things like that.
Right.
You know, I don't know what would have to happen in order to make me play like an improved Tracers 3-for-1 agenda deck where it makes all my Tracer Ice.
I just want to be able to play Surveillance Sweep in a deck.
Right.
I adore that card, and it's never been good once, but I still like the idea of it.
So that's the current where the runner has to pay the
traces. Yeah, the runner pays first on traces.
So basically, the runner loses all traces, is what you're
talking about. That's basically what it says, is the runner either loses all traces or pays way more money than they will ever need to.
That's a pretty good current.
Yeah. The problem is that it only works during a run, so it doesn't work on like hard-hitting news or like threat level alpha or any of the stuff that the traces that don't happen during a run.
See, I don't know if this meta is ever going to happen, Andrew.
No, I don't think it will. But
well, we got to work on it. Surveillance Sweep meta. It's going to be good. That'll make Sunny really, really popular, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, Sunny's already a free win against making news, especially this version. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, if you want to be making news, build Sunny. Like, any Sunny deck, and you'll probably win.
If you're afraid of someone in your meta playing making news, I want you to try building a Kabanisa Wu deck that has three rabbit holes in it, and you'll end up going up to four link, and you just include the rabbit holes as, like, a tech card. Like
yeah, whatever. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, value rabbit holes.
Maybe I should do that. I don't know. Well, Andrew, that's about all I got, man.
Awesome. Real pleasure to be on this. I've not been on a Netrunner podcast before. This was really fun.
Well, you are just a delight. So Netrunner podcast makers, you got to get this guy, Andrew, on, right? My listenership just went up 10% just because Andrew Schneider's on my podcast.
I would hope so. Also, shouts out to your house for losing power during the initial recording of this.
Oh, my God. Halfway, like, we're like 35 minutes in, and my entire house loses power. which, luckily, it got recovered. I was nervous we were going to have to do all that again, but...
Yeah.
but it worked out.
Yeah, so. Shouts out to Audacity as well.
Nice job, Audacity, for auto-saving my recording. You're the best. So listener, real quick, I want to, encourage you to send me, any ideas that you have for discussion, any questions that you might have, even if it's kind of like a new player type question, or even if it's just a discussion question about what I think about, new IDs or new strategies, talk to me. I want to interact. We should be friends. That's all I want in this life. And Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely, man. It's my pleasure.
You can find us at least twice a month, maybe. Sorry, I've been really bad about that. At shipmentfromshiloh.podomatic.com. You can shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. My username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Andrew's username on all things Netrunner is Cranked. Thanks to Foundation for the amazing theme music, and thanks to you for listening in. That's our show. This is Graham Carlson signing off for the night. Stay safe, New Angeles, and join us next time on Shipment from Shiloh. Dude, Netrunner is such a weird game. Like, why do I know that, like, equivocation with Encore is, like, a thing, right? Apocalypse, equivocation, Encore. Like, that's so
dumb. Hey, man. Akshara Serene won a national.
Akshara Serene did win.
We live in a timeline where Serene, possibly one of the worst cards ever printed, won a national. I remember playtesting that card, and I'm like, no one's gonna play this.
This is terrible.
Yeah, this is an awful effect, especially because Astro was legal at the time that we were playtesting Wombat Cycle.
Yeah.
So I'm
yeah,
like, why would I ever
true.
Want to give my opponent free Astro scripts? Like, a fifth click doesn't do anything. But here we are in the timeline.
And what the counterplay to that, or like the way to shut that off, was like that Shaper card, right? That,
Price
like...
of Freedom. Yeah, you just play her, get the click back, and then kill her with Price of Freedom to just prevent the court from advancing cards.
But like, why? Like, that's so dumb. Like,
it's terrible. It's not a good combo. It just buys you a turn.
Oh my god. Mumbed Cycle was a mess, dude.
listen, man, I tried.
I'm gonna be real with you. It was real messy.